is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! What a great run! He's in trouble. He is dropped. Kyle Williams dropped it. Oh, baby, what a hit. Tyrod looks. Tyrod on the run. Nobody in front of him. Touchdown! There's T-Mobile.
He's going to come through.
Sammy in the end zone. Got it! Got it! Touchdown! Sammy Watkins, touchdown, Buffalo! McCoy, touch to the right. Outrunning everybody. 10, 5, touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show, the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, live at One Bills Drive on a nice Thursday afternoon at One Bills Drive, Orchard Park, New York. John Murphy and Donald Jones coming to you live from our One Buffalo studio. And good afternoon to those of you listening on the radio side on WGR Sports Radio 550, those who may be tuned in on MSG and our simulcast. As we approach, we are probably right at the end of the Bills' spring workout program. The end of, the end of off-season, because now the Bills are going to take off for five weeks from today. First training camp practice, and then that's training camp, and then you're really into 2017. That's kind of what we're going to focus on the show today, myself and Donald. And, of course, we always appreciate your input. The phone line's open at 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-552-550. Or via Twitter at John Murphy Show. Good guest lineup today. Coming up at the bottom of this hour, Aaron Schatz, NFL head of Football Outsiders, ESPN analyst for ESPN on NFL. Looks at things from a statistical and analytics standpoint. He's ranked the best NFL teams of the last 30 years, the best NFL offense, the best NFL defense, best NFL special teams. Yeah, the Bills pop up on some of those lists. We'll talk with Aaron Schatz coming up at the bottom of this hour. 1 o'clock today, Nathan Peterman, the Bills quarterback, the fifth-round draft pick. He is one of those rookies who just wrapped up the final session of the rookie development camp. He'll be on the line with us at 1 o'clock this afternoon. We'll talk with Lauren Hall from PSE, the multimedia journalist from PSE, about the 50-yard finish, the race that will end in the 50-yard line at New Era Field this Saturday. And we're going to talk with one of the all-time favorites here, Fred Jackson, who is getting back into football at least for one day for that game in the middle of July out in San Francisco, part of the Spring League, the showcase game. All of that coming up on today's show. But, Donald, it is the last day of rookie development camp. The rookies were here starting first weekend in May, so about a six-week rookies been here at One Bills Drive. Of course, the veterans left last week. We're 5 weeks away from the start of training camp. We are, it appears, right at the tail end of the offseason and the run-up to 2017. When the players come back on July 27th, it'll be all about getting ready for the season.
Oh, yeah.
We want to talk today about this offseason. We want to hear from folks, too. But you played a prominent role in the end of the offseason today, right? You were in there today talking with the rookies as part of the rookie development program.
Yeah, you know, first I had a chance to speak to Coach McDermott, and I'm like, Coach, you got 5 weeks. You going to do something? He said, I'll probably go away for about a day. It's like, all right, Coach, I guess so. But I did have a chance to speak to the rookies for about 45 minutes.
And Coach McDermott asked you to do that?
No, Marlon okay. Kerner, what is he, head of player and
player engagement?
Player engagement, yeah, so – he's the one that asked me to come, and they do a lot of different programs. They talk about finances. They talk about media, social media. They talk about a lot of different things. They talk about dealing with guys like you and me and the right things to say and wrong things to say. So it's good for those guys. I'm not sure if he ended up doing the golf thing, but I know that's something that he said he wanted
golf
to do.
Lessons, yeah.
Yeah, the golf lessons, the lessons. So I did have a chance to speak to them today, and it was –
What did you talk about?
I talked about a lot of different things. And the biggest thing is understanding, number one, that you don't just represent yourself. Well, understanding that you are a brand, right? And that's something that we try to teach younger players all the time. You are a brand. You're yourself. You know, you are not just Donald Jones anymore. Donald Jones has become a brand now that you have – this Bills logo attached to you, you have that NFL brand, that NFL shield behind you. You are a brand, and you live life in a fishbowl, like I said the other day, and you have so many different people that are watching you for many different reasons, you know. And right now, this time, this next 5 weeks, that is like one of the most important times for any player in the NFL, but especially for rookies, because they have a little bit more money in their pockets than they did when they were in college. And that's really all of them. I mean, even if you were undrafted, you might have got like a $5,000 signing bonus, a $10,000 signing bonus. You were probably making a little bit over $1,000 a week for practices, different things like that. So you have a little bit more money in your pockets, and everybody's pulling at you from different angles. You know, people want money, people want time. That was something that was very hard for me. I would go home, and my family members and closest friends, everybody wants to spend time. And, you know, I'm like, I don't have that much time to spend with everybody. I can't go see mommy. I can't go see daddy and grandma. And even though you want to, I have to train. I have to work, you know. And I was training 2 or 3 times a day. And so you have that side of it. Then you have the money side of it where people are like, hey, man, I need, you know, I got a bill that need to be paid or something yeah. like that. Can let me hold $200? Or you have people coming at you for investments, different things.
It's hard to say no.
It's hard to say no because these are – this is – I remember
– family, friends, right?
I had a veteran tell me his grandmother called him once, and his grandmother was like, hey, man, they're about to turn off the electricity. And he was like, all right, well, let's call and do it right now. And she was like, well, we don't have to do it right now. He was like, no, let's call and do it right now. And so he called, and she told him it was like a $1,000 bill. And he called, and the bill was like $200.
Yeah.
And he was like, grandma, like you tried to get me out of $800, you know? And those are the types of things that happen with your family members. So you're going to deal with different things like that. And I told those guys, don't be the guy in the media with the DUI. Don't be that guy. I told them about they need to be in shape once they get to training camp. You know, this is very important for them to be in shape so that when you get there, you can pass the conditioning test, number one.
Right.
You don't want to be the guy that fails the conditioning test, especially as a rookie. That's bad. And then knowing your playbook. And the playbook, they don't allow you to take your playbook home. And so you had to take a lot of notes throughout the OTAs. If you didn't take notes, you're behind the eight ball because everybody else is going to come in. And the coaching staff, they expect you to know all those plays. You're going to take off 5 weeks where you're not even going to think about the playbook. And you're going to get back in here, and it's going to be rapid fire. They're going right back at it. And everything, for the most part, has been installed by this point. If you don't know your stuff, there's going to be an issue. You know. So I talked a little bit about that. I covered so many different things with those guys,
yeah.
just trying to get them to understand. It's real. It's a business. The league, at the end of the day, the NFL does not need any of you. Like, you guys could not be here, and this team could move forward without you. They could find somebody else that can do your job. And that was the biggest thing I was trying to get across.
So, and you were speaking to them at mid-morning today, and I think they're gone, right? The day is over.
Yeah,
for the rookies.
Yeah, they were gone. I think they had like a small lunch, and then it was hard. I was trying to get those guys to ask me some questions.
Yeah, but
nobody had any questions. I think the only person that asked a question, it was one person that asked a question, and you know, it was a good question. But those guys are ready to get out of here.
Yeah, because as we said, it's the end of off season as of today. 5 weeks off for all these players. They'll be back at training camp 5 weeks from today, first training camp practice. We kind of want to start our show by talking about that and reviewing what's gone on here since the last season ended. You know, last season ended with that loss, that terrible loss at the Meadowlands in New Jersey against the Jets. A lot of changes since then. On our website at BuffaloBills.com, we put together a piece. Chris Brown and I talked about the top 10 superlatives, the best things that have happened since last season ended. The Bills 2017 offseason. What were some of the high points of the 2017 offseason? And that's what we want to hear from you, too. Obviously, the hiring of a coach and general manager, the most significant developments, but there's a lot of other things going on here as well over these last 6 months or so. And we want to get a sense from you of what you think is important, what you thought was significant, what you thought was funny, who was most impressive when it came to this offseason. Give us a call. The lines are open, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550, or you can do it via Twitter. The offseason over, we want to rank, we want to discuss the most significant developments so far, and you can give us a call to talk about that. And we're going to start talking about that and take it out of the format of what's up on our website. The veteran who was most impressive during this offseason. And this is a guy, and I've been saying this for a couple of months now, Marcell Dareus. I consider him the indispensable man on the roster. If he can get back to where he was back in 2013, 2014, when he was playing at a Pro Bowl level, I think the Bills go a long way towards challenging for a playoff spot. And so far, Marcell Dareus has impressed me with his approach, He was in here a couple of weeks ago. Was it last week? Talking about his Zen approach to, to the offseason so far.
Zen.
Yeah, he has dropped some weight. He has participated, and I don't have the numbers. They don't release the numbers, but it appeared to me that he was here virtually every offseason workout. I think we asked him that last week, and he was not going to tell us. He said, I've been to most of them, and he has been here to most of them and done a good job. So to me, Marcell Dareus, with what looks like, and I know you know you kind of hold your breath with Marcell, he's had some bumps in the road, but what looks like a new approach, a new focus, he, to me, has been the most impressive veteran of the 2017 offseason so far.
If you ask anybody about this time and going into this 5 or 6 weeks, that 6 weeks that the veterans have had off, if you said, who scares you the most about this 6 weeks? You ask anybody, any fan, anybody, the bad thing is that most people would say Marcell Dareus, and that's just because of the things that have happened with him in the past, you know? Mm-hmm. But I think when we had him in here on the show, and then when you just watch him out there on the field, he looks like he's really in tune with what's going on. He looks like he wants to prove something, that, you know, I can get back to where I was when I was at the really, I guess, the peak of his career. And he's still so young that he can still be at the peak of his career, like still at the peak of his talent, strength, ability, everything, you know. And so if he can just keep it all together off the field, he'll be good on the field. And he looks like he's really in his zen, and he looks happy. For me, I would have to go with a guy like Tyrod Taylor. And I think he impressed me the most because of the situation he was in the last game of the season when he was benched, and then how he handled being benched, number one, and then how he handled the entire contract situation, you know. And we kept saying, man, how is this guy going to handle this? Would he even redo a deal? The fact that he decided, listen, I want to be here. I want to play for this organization. I want to be the quarterback for this organization. And the fact that he did restructure his deal, and the way that he did it, he never came out and said anything crazy in the media. He handled it so professionally. And for me, that's why he impressed me the most. And then he came out here after he got his deal done. He was here a lot, you know. Mm-hmm. If you remember, like, the even before everybody got back for OTAs, you would see Tyrod Taylor in the building working out a lot, you know. If not every day, it was quite
even
often.
Before his contract was restructured.
Yeah, exactly. He was here working out all the time. And then once they got into OTAs, I've heard really nothing but good from Tyrod Taylor. You know, he looked good in practice, hitting guys over the middle of the field, hitting guys on the outside. He looked comfortable in the offense. So for me, that's why he impressed me the most.
So let's hear from you. Who's the most impressive veteran of the offseason so far? Of the offseason now, because we are closing officially. Donald and I have taken it upon ourselves to close the offseason as of today.
And it doesn't close until we close it on the John Murphy Show.
And Donald had the honor of basically being the last guy, the last speaker to talk to these rookies today. But let us know, which veteran impressed you the most, what you've heard, maybe what you've seen on video of the mini camps, and even, as Donald said, just the demeanor, the way that Tyrod Taylor handled things this offseason. Give us a call. Lines open 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Again, we're working off the post, which is up at buffalobills.com. The most impressive Bills performer under the age of 25. We could have gone rookies, but under the age of 25 encompasses rookies, first, maybe a couple of second-year players as well. The most impressive Bills performer under the age of 25. Who do you have there, Donald?
I have to go with the guy, Tre'Davious White. Now, he's 22. I just asked him, actually, when I was doing the speech, how old are you again? He's like, 22. I think the way he's come in and handled everything, he was drafted in the first round. He had a child 3 days later.
Yep.
So that right there is like something, who knows, like so much going through his mind at one time. And then to come up here and the way he's looked in practice, the way he's handled and taken in the playbook, I think that right there is impressive. From everyone that you speak to, they say, listen, this guy has picked up the playbook fast, and he understands it. He understands where his help is. He understands everything that's going on around here. I think for me, he is the most impressive player under the age of 25.
Yeah, I can see that. You don't have to be a rookie if you have a suggestion. You know, in fact, Chris Brown went with Ronald Darby going into his third year. But for me, the most impressive performer under the age of 25 is the guy we had on the show just yesterday, the offensive lineman Deion Dawkins, who's been running with the ones. Second-round draft pick, you would hope that a second-rounder is ready to start. The Bills have done more than hope. The Bills have plugged him in the starting lineup. His coach, Juan Castillo, offensive line coach, said on our show back in late May, he is a starter. You know, he says the future is wherever we need him, but he said he's ready to start. It amounts to where we're going to need him. They have used him at left tackle. We anticipate that once Cordy Glenn is healthy and Glenn continues to work here, we all anticipate that Deion Dawkins is going to get the shot to compete for the starting job at right tackle. But as Castillo said, he's ready to start. And I think the Bills are probably going to start Deion Dawkins. To me, he has been the most impressive player under the age of 25 on the roster.
I think both of these guys are guys that, even though they're both rookies, they really handle everything. You know, not just picking up playbook, not just on the field stuff. They handle the media well, too. When you hear most of these rookies, when you hear them talk, and we're going to have Nate Peterman on the show today, when you hear all of these guys talk, you're like, man, these dudes are, like, well-spoken. They understand what's going on. They know what to say, what really not to say, what to stay away from. It seems like they've all been very well trained, and I don't know if that's just in college or if Coach McDermott has done a good job of saying, look, this is what you say and this is what you don't say. This is what I don't want to hear in the media. If he's been the guy that's done that, then he's done a good job of training these guys in the short 2 months. But these guys are impressive on and off the field.
So if you got a guy you'd like to recommend as the most impressive performer under the age of 25, lines are open for that, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Since the 2016 season ended on New Year's Day, and until now, there have been a ton of transactions, obviously. Coaching changes, front office changes, and most notably player changes, right? Almost half the Buffalo roster is flipped over from last year.
It's like almost half. It's big churn.
Yeah, big churn, big roster churn.
Big churn.
And we want to know, what do you think is the most surprising transaction of all the moves the Bills made since last season ended on New Year's Day? Most surprising transaction. I'm going to go with draft night. There was talk that the Bills wanted to trade down, and we talked about that a lot leading into the draft. But on draft night, not only did they trade down, they moved down 17 spots and picked up an extra first rounder next year. That surprised me. That sort of commitment to trading down. They still got a player, Tre'Davious White, who fills a need that they have. They bypassed some pretty good players, O.J. Howard, Pat Mahomes, the quarterback, who the Chiefs moved up to get. But to pick up an extra first-rounder next year, I did not see that coming, and I would rank that as the number one most surprising transaction of the Buffalo Bills offseason. Close behind that, I would put the relative ease with which they got Tyrod Taylor signed to an extension, a team-friendly extension. But the trade down to get that extra number one, that shocked me on draft night. How about you?
Yeah, that trade down shocked us all, especially, I mean, we were here doing the show. And
we were on the air for like 12 hours that day.
We were, right? And it was like, oh, man. Yeah. Like, first of all, when it happened, it was like, oh, we're going to be here all night.
Yeah,
now.
That's right.
You know, it really did shock a lot of people that they did that, because I remember going into it saying, like, if they trade down, first of all, it's hard to trade back. But if they do, there's no way they trade back into the 20s, you know. And they traded all the way down to 27, which was shocking. And the fact that they picked up another first-round pick, I mean, the whole way that whole thing happened on trade night, on draft night, was very shocking. For me, I would have to go with, and this is, you know, a little bit different than what you said, I would have to go with the firing of Doug Whaley. And I think the biggest thing is, not that he was fired, but just when he was fired. I don't think that was something that you and I talked about. It was like, okay, they didn't do it back when Rex Ryan was fired. I didn't think that he would get fired at that point in the year. You know, I thought, all right, Doug Whaley would probably have one more year to go if something was going to happen. So it just shocked me that they actually did that the day after the draft. You know, that right there, I remember waking up that Sunday morning like, wow, they fired Doug Whaley. Yeah. I was in shock, you know. So not to discredit Brandon Bean, they've done a great job of hiring Brandon Bean, and then he's done a great job of hiring everybody else underneath him. And I think they're moving in the right direction with everything that they're doing. It was just shocking that they fired Doug Whaley when they did.
Yeah, no question. I was shocked by that, too. I think all of us were. You know, we had a chance to talk with Doug Whaley a couple of days before the draft, and, you know, I don't think you saw that coming. I don't think so. Despite all the rumors and reports, you know, we got the sense that that wasn't going to happen. But it happened.
Yeah.
And here we are. That was way back, you know, back in April, late April. Finally, as we talk about the 2017 offseason, and again, you're welcome to join us at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. On this show, and most people in the media look for storylines, fun things to cover, interesting things, different twists and turns. The most interesting storyline since January 1st, 2017. What do you think it was, Donald?
The most interesting storyline is that Tyrod Taylor contract, and if they were going to restructure a deal, if they were going to pick up his option, that was something that for a good amount of time when we didn't have anything to talk about, that was what we were talking about. You know, and I think a lot of people, that was like number one, everybody wanted to know what's going to happen with Tyrod Taylor's contract. And I think a lot of the veterans on this team wanted to know too, guys like Kyle Williams and Lorenzo, who, you know, was a free agent. They wanted to know what's going to happen with the quarterback. Is he going to be quarterback or not? Because, you know, if he's not going to be the guy, then who knows if they would have come back or not, you know? So I think that storyline right there was the most interesting since January.
It was interesting. People love to talk about quarterbacks. We talked about that quarterback in particular a lot. There was a point late last year when it seemed like the Bills were going to be boxed in to either picking up his extended contract that they signed last August or letting him go. They found a third way, and it turns out a pretty good third way to keep Tyrod around and make it a cap, a team-friendly contract. And that was an interesting story to follow. But I can definitely recall last November, December, thinking it's either on or off with Tyrod.
Right, exactly.
Red light, green light, and they found a different way.
They found a yellow light.
Which is pretty important, yeah. So that was very interesting to follow. The you know, the draft is always interesting. The trade down, that was a big story. The player, you know, the free agency, great storylines about free agency. Lorenzo Alexander is here. Zach Brown is not here. I mean, that was something that we talked about a lot back in March. You know, could they keep those guys, and who would they elect to keep? They lost Robert Woods. I think many of us anticipated that. Marquise Goodwin, they lost Mike Gillisley. I don't think many of us anticipated that.
No, we didn't.
And there was a lot going on this offseason. But to me, the most interesting storyline since last season ended throughout this offseason, and it's a storyline that continues, really. I think it's Sean McDermott trying to change the culture here. You know, the new head coach hired in January, trying to put his imprint on this team, his work ethic, his focus, his intensity. And it seems to have taken some hold. But I think, look, and realistically, this is going to be more than a one-year process, and certainly going to be more than a six-month process. He came on in January, just a few months in the offseason now, and it's going to take more than one season to implement it. But you can see it during the spring practices, up-tempo, business-like, a strong attendance at the voluntary practices, a no-nonsense, button-down approach that Sean McDermott brings here. It extends throughout his coaching staff. He's made significant changes in the coaching staff. Brandon Bean is part of this as well, the general manager who made sweeping changes in the Bills personnel department. You know, 17 guys let go. But to me, that culture change was the most interesting thing to follow, and it's not over yet, but the most interesting thing to follow in the offseason, how veterans react to it. You know, some of the old veterans, Kyle Williams and some of the older guys, and what do they think of it, and how the rookies take to it. And it's going to take a while, too. You know, we were talking about the Patriots a lot on yesterday's show, and it struck me that all of these, you know, all of this great team culture, this, you know, the team building, the Patriots work ethic that is so highly praised, and it's real, the Patriot way. I'm certain that didn't happen in one season.
No,
I know
it didn't.
It took some time to get
that. It took some
done.
Time. And we kind of wrestle back and forth with, you know, how do you change culture? Does it come when you win first?
Right.
Or does it come with, you know, just leadership and different things like that? You know, those are the things that we kind of wrestle back and forth with. But I think he's done a good job of changing the mindset around the building. And that's in the locker room and even outside the locker room.
Sure.
You know, he's done a good job of changing everyone's mindset to, I guess, that playoff caliber is something that he's been using. And really for everyone trusting the process. I think I just used both of his mantras this year. But I think he's really done a good job of relaying his message to everyone in this building, including the players. And so I think it's, you know, and the players have done a good job of taking that in and translating that to the field.
Yeah.
You know, so I think another storyline that is going to continue at least this season is the fact that they didn't pick up Sammy's fifth-year option.
That's right.
You know, and we have to see how that plays out because we don't know how he's going to look once he looked pretty good in you know, the days that he practiced in OTAs. We'll see once we get to training camp and then on to the field. You know, he's in a contract year. So I think that's a storyline that a lot of people are going to be paying attention to throughout the season.
Chris Pearson tweets in, the draft has to be the most significant for a second number one next year. Great move in the pick of wide receiver Zay Jones. The draft is always significant. You're right about that, Chris. The draft is always, in most seasons, most teams, the most significant offseason event. This year for the Bills, there was a lot going on. And Donald and I have officially pronounced the 2017 offseason over as
we
of
have.
Today. Once those rookies left the building a few minutes ago, the offseason ended, I think.
It did. And a part of that culture change started with, you know, just different ways that he went about free agency. Different ways that, first of all, he went about hiring his coaches.
Mm-hmm.
Everything was thought out, methodical. And then in hiring, well, once they got to free agency, the way he did different things in free agency. And then once they got to the draft, you know, draft night was like, wow. And it just shows you that everything that they are doing is well thought out, and it's all about the future. They don't want to just – they want to win now, but they want to have a sustained, constant winning team every single year in the playoffs. And so everything that they are doing is about the future of this team. And I think that is a part of the culture change as well.
We are recapping the offseason, the 2017 offseason. You are welcome to join us on the phone lines at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550. In the meantime, a look back at the last 30 years, three decades of the NFL from Aaron Schatz of Football Outsiders and ESPN.com. The Bills show up on his lists of the best defenses, the best offenses, and the best special teams of the last 30 years. We'll talk with Aaron Schatz when we return. The John Murphy Show, presented by NEPA Auto Parts, live at One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Donald Jones. We're live at One Bills Drive. We're going to talk more about the Buffalo Bills offseason, but let's go into NFL history a little bit. Joining us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, the creator of Football Outsiders, a football statistical analysis analytics website. He is also a regular contributor to ESPN.com. Aaron Schatz joins us on the line. Aaron, it's John Murphy and Donald Jones. Thank you very much for being with us. We really appreciate it.
Hey, guys, thanks for having me on. Always good to talk football.
Yeah, you got our attention with this deep dive into NFL history. I mean, 30 years, Aaron, you've broken down the top offenses, defensive teams, special teams unit, and the best teams of the last 30 years. That's a lot of work. That's, as I said, a deep dive into, I guess, recent NFL history.
Yeah, and I really also have to give a lot of credit to a guy by the name of Jeremy Snyder, because what we do with our advanced stats is we break down the play-by-play. It's not based on, like, the overall numbers. It's based on looking at every single play compared to the down and distance and how successful teams were. And to do that, you need the play-by-play. And he typed in a bunch of game books from old games and even found games on video that we couldn't find game books for, so that we could get every single game back to 1987. And now we're working on 84 through 86. So It's a lot of deep NFL history.
Well, 30 years includes the Buffalo Bills' four-year run at the Super Bowls. I've looked once, twice. I'm about to look a third time. I don't find the Bills, the Super Bowl-era Bills, on your list of the 30 best NFL teams of the last 30 years. Aaron, am I missing something?
No, you're not. See, the fact is that as good as those Bills teams were, it was during the era when the NFL was remarkably imbalanced between the NFC and AFC. So they were the best team in the AFC, certainly after the playoffs. So sometimes in the regular season they weren't the best team, but by the time the playoffs were done, they were the best team. But the teams in the NFC were better, so when you look at our numbers, not only do the Bills not end up as high as those 49ers and Giants teams, but they also get dinged for having easy schedules in some of those years, although not all. They had a tough schedule in 1992.
Aaron, now, just let me just clarify this for me. We're looking at not in terms of numbers. I mean, are we looking at in terms of talent, how talented the teams are? What exactly are you guys using to measure this?
No, the advanced stat we use is called DVOA. We've been using it for 14 years now. It takes every single play, figures, you know, has a success number based on how successful the play was compared to the down and distance, right? Because a five-yard play is very different on first and 10 than it is on third and one or third and 15, right? On third and 15, that five-yard play is probably a failure unless you happen to be in deep field goal range. Mm-hmm. On third and one, 5 yards, that's a great play. Then we adjust all that based on the schedule each team's played. and we adjust to the situation, and special teams get adjusted for weather and altitude. Like, for example, it's easier to kick the ball in Denver because the air is so thin. So that's how we get these efficiency ratings. And then for these ratings, for these rankings that we did on ESPN Insider, we also have added the postseason. Normally, the ratings we have on footballoutsiders.com only include the regular season. So the best Bills team of the Super Bowl teams is 1990, and they end up coming out 44th. But the surprise best Bills team of the last 30 years, and remember, we're looking here at play-by-play and adjusting for schedule, so it's not necessarily based on wins and losses. The top team from the Bills is actually the 2004 Bills, who rank 35th, the best team of the last 30 years to miss the playoffs.
Yeah, we got to talk more about that. But Aaron Schatz joins us.
I'm sorry to bring up the bad memories. Memories of 2004.
You know what? It was an eventful year and certainly an eventful finish. I want to get more on that. But while we're on the topic of the 30 best teams, overall teams, the number one team is a team that most Bills fans would be familiar with. That's the 91 Washington team that beat the Bills in the playoffs that year. I recall covering this team back then, Aaron, and going into the, you know, as the season, regular season wound down, going into the playoffs, it was pretty clear the Bills were going to be on a collision course with that Washington team, and also pretty clear that they had very little chance to beat that Washington team of 91.
Right, and that was a really good Bills team, right? Yeah. I said, you know, 1990 was the best of those Super Bowl teams in our numbers, and 2004 is the best of any of the Bills teams. Well, 1991 is third best, right? So that's a really good team. But that 1991 Washington team is so good. It's amazingly well-balanced. People talk about the Patriots Super Bowl teams, and they talk about the New England Patriots and how it was sort of an all-for-one mentality, you know, the Patriot way, no-name players. Well, that 1991 Washington team is the epitome of no-name players. Only two guys made the All-Pro team that year. It's a lot of guys who nobody's heard of or guys who only had three or four big years. I mean, Mark Rippon did not have a long career as a great quarterback. They had three running backs in their committee. They had three great wide receivers. The defense was full of stars, but the only one who's a Hall of Famer, I believe, is Darrell Green. But they just did everything well. They were in the top 30 of the last 30 years in all three phases of the game. They were actually in the top 20 of all three phases of the game, offense, defense, and special teams.
Aaron Schatz is our guest from ESPN.com. He has written a statistical and analytics breakdown of the best teams of the last 30, best defense of the last 30 years. Fourth on your list, the aforementioned 2004 Buffalo Bills. And you described that as one of the greatest defense that almost nobody remembers. Can you talk about that group and why they maybe scored so high, Aaron?
Sure. I mean, they scored so high because they were, you know, really dominant in a lot of ways. That team was actually really remarkable. It's in our top 30 for both defense and for special teams. But the offense and just the timing of bad close losses just kept them out of the playoffs. But what's remarkable about that defense is you want to talk about no-name teams, right? It's very likely nobody from the 2004 Buffalo Bills is going to end up in the Hall of Fame unless London Fletcher or Pat Williams sneaks in. And, of course, London Fletcher has to battle all the other great small-sized linebackers, right? It's like if there's a place for London Fletcher, do you make a place for Sam Mills? Do you make a place for Zach Thomas? Do you make a place for Teddy Bruschi? Right. But they had, you know, 45 sacks, even though Aaron Schobel was the only guy with more than five, right? They had the great defensive tackle, good cornerbacks, right? McGee was awesome on special teams, but he also was a good cornerback. And they allowed a league-low 4.3 yards per play. So that was a really strong defense.
And you got me when I read that. I got thinking about the coordinator. Jerry Gray was the coordinator. Dick LeBeau was around the year before, but I think they played a lot of kind of Dick LeBeau schemes in 2004 as well. I just recall that being, I think Dick LeBeau was there in 04, but that was really good scheme defense too. And
They may have done a lot of zone blitzing, right, but it was a 4-3 defense, right? Because the big, right. I mean, such of the strength was the tackles, because you had Pat Williams and then Sam Adams. I mean, that is just two huge dudes you cannot run on.
We're on the line with Aaron Schatz from Football Outsiders. Let's talk about the special teams on the 2004 and 2005 Buffalo Bills. You have them ranked among your top units all time. And a lot of that was the return work of Terrence McGee back then. Is that what you found?
Yeah, McGee was a really good return guy for those 2 years. And, you know, special teams are much more inconsistent from year to year than defense or offense. Some of it is sample size, right? There's fewer plays on special teams than there are on offense and defense, and more of them are like really big plays, like turnovers or touchdown returns, and so you're going to have a lot bigger swing from year to year. But Buffalo had a very consistent period of strong special teams when Bobby April was the coordinator there, including being number one for two straight years. And McGee was a really good return man. The 26 yards per return with three touchdowns in 2004. 2005, 30 yards per return, although he only had one touchdown. That is the second-best kick return season in our database. The only season that beats it is a Josh Cribbs season from the late 2000s Cleveland Browns. Yeah. And Brian Moorman was also really good, a really good punter, first-team All-Pro in 2005. Now, of course, the flip of this, I would regret to not mention the unbelievable that only 4 years before this, the Bills had the worst special teams we've ever measured. The year they told Steve Christie to deliberately kick short all the time, and yet they still allowed 15 returns of 30 yards or more. To turn things around in 4 years is almost more remarkable than to be number one for two straight.
You know, and one more thing about the 04 Buffalo Bills with that good, deep, great defense, really good special teams. The tragedy, of course, for Bills fans is that it all came down to that season finale against Pittsburgh and one of the flukiest losses, maybe the worst loss of this entire 17-year run of non-playoff misery here. That game haunts this franchise, and for good reason, don't you think?
Oh, yeah, and it haunts Mike Mularkey as far as I'm concerned. I was shocked by how well the Titans played last year, because when they hired Mike Mularkey, honestly, all I could think is, this is the guy who coached the, I'm sorry to say this, biggest Week 17 choke job of the last, you know, since they went to 17 weeks at least. Maybe he's gotten over that. I wonder what'll happen if the Titans get into a Week 17 must-win game. But that team had played so well, right? I mean, three of the five games before that loss, they allowed fewer than 10 points. And they were just on a roll. And the defense even played well in that last game, except that at the end, they couldn't get the ball away from Pittsburgh, and Willie Parker just ran out the clock for like 7.5 minutes or something, and they couldn't get the ball back to the offense.
Crazy. Aaron, one more question about the best defenses, a league-wide question. Many people consider the 2000 Super Bowl champion Baltimore Ravens as maybe the most dominant defense in recent memory. You've got them third in your rankings over the last 30 years, third-ranked defense. What happened there?
Right. Well, part of it is that the 1991 Philadelphia Eagles are not considered in the same class as the 2000 Ravens and 2002 Bucks and 2013 Seahawks because they didn't make the playoffs. But they didn't make the playoffs because as bad as the offenses were for some of those teams, the 91 Eagles offense was way worse after Randall Cunningham tore his ACL 15 minutes into the first game of the season. Mm-hmm. So they, you know, for example, they allowed fewer than 4 yards per play, and yet they finished fifth overall in points allowed because they kept, you know, the defense kept having to come on the field when the offense of the other team was already on the other side of the 50. Like, what do you want from these guys, right? Like, they did everything that they possibly could to win games, but it's a team sport, and you got to have all three units. I mean, at least you have to have two units. But that 91 Eagles defense was so dominant. 44% of passes completed against them, 55 sacks, 43 forced fumbles, 26 interceptions, less than 3 yards of carry on the ground. And so the 2000 Ravens, it's not like they aren't great. I mean, I have them number three. They're pretty awesome.
Yeah.
But they were not a fabulous pass defense during the regular season. They were really only a fabulous pass defense in the playoffs. They were an amazing run defense, greatest run defense of all time. And then between them, I have the 2002 Bucks, who are the best pass defense of all.
Well, that series, the best units on ESPN.com, got my attention here because you forced us to, as I said, when the Baltimore Ravens of 2000 or the Buffalo Bills of 2004, it forces you to go back a little bit and take a look at this. Congratulations on the series and really good work. I mean, as I said, a very deep dive into recent NFL history. Thanks for coming on today with us to talk about it.
Thanks for having me. And, I mean, I realize it's only 13 or 14 years ago.
Yeah.
But I hope that this really helps people remember some of those great players who played in the early 2000s for the teams that people don't remember.
Yeah.
You know, the Buffalo Bills and the Kansas City Chiefs of those years that had some really great players. Dekeo Spikes, Lawyer Malloy, right? Schoble, Fletcher. I hope that this helps people go back, people from outside of Buffalo, go back and appreciate how great those players were.
Thanks, Aaron. We appreciate it.
All right.
Aaron Schatz is the creator of Football Outsiders, ESPN analyst. He's got a series of posts on ESPN.com. Football Outsiders, 30 best teams, 30 best defenses, 30 best offenses, 30 best special teams units over the last 30 years.
2004?
Yeah.
That was a
the
shot.
The golden era.
That was a
Not
shot.
Really.
And I've heard a lot about that team, but for him to say that that team was better than the Super Bowl era
yeah.
teams was like,
oh, the
wow.
defense was, yeah. Yeah, well, no, he said it was the team was better.
Yeah, he said the team was better.
What are they, 34th or 35th?
Yeah.
Best non-playoff team, or highest ranking of any, I'm sorry, highest ranking of any non-playoff team was that 2004 Buffalo Bills.
That 2004 Buffalo Bills.
They were this close.
And what happened that year?
They lost the finale to the Steelers, and they were losing the Steelers' backups.
Wow.
I don't know how it happened. But it happened. I was there. All right, we're going to take a break. We want to engage with you again on this 2017 Buffalo Bills offseason. What did you like? What did you not like? What maybe they missed on a couple of things? Give us a call, 803-0550. Toll free, 1-888-550-2550. Aaron joined us on the Subway Fresh Tank Hotline, Subway Eat Fresh. Back with more of the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy and Donald Jones. We are recapping, reviewing the 2017 offseason. It started January 2nd, the day after the Bills finished up against the Jets, and it ended today. We think we called it at 12 noon, over, offseason over, because the rookies are gone. We're 5 weeks away from today, 5 weeks from today, when the Bills hit the field at St. John Fisher for the first time in 2017. So give us your thoughts, your recap of the 2017 offseason. We don't have a Twitter poll up today, but we'd like to hear from you about the most significant developments of the offseason, what you liked, what you didn't like, where they came up short, where you'd like to see them done a little bit more. A couple of tweets on this. Ralph Ventry tweets in, I agree with Donald, most surprising offseason occurrence was the timing of Whaley's dismissal. Look, I know what you mean. I do think that after the draft is when you switch out your, for the most part, is when you switch out your personnel department. You don't let guys walk in, if you can avoid it, in January or February and take all of their proprietary knowledge that they developed with you to another team. So that didn't surprise me. What surprised me about the timing of it was that just talking to people in the building, it was indicated that he was going to be okay, that Doug Whaley was going to be okay, and he wasn't the day after the draft. That surprised me.
Yeah, I mean, talking to people around the building, talking to him, he didn't give you any indication or any, like, the slightest, like, man, I don't know if I'll be here or not type of – he didn't give you that at all, you know. And so for it to happen the day after the draft, it was like, wow. Like, you know, and then you started to hear different things about who was running the draft. I mean, I think we were hearing that during the draft.
I think Whaley was involved in the draft. I
don't
have any questions about that.
Exactly, you know. And so it seemed like such a good draft, in my opinion. And then for that to happen the next day, I was like, wow, like that's crazy.
Drew Jacks tweets in, as far as the offseason, I love the coach and the philosophy he and the new GM bring. Liked the draft. Was unhappy they didn't take Sammy's fifth-year option, and they let touchdown Mike go to New England. Yeah, I can see why people would feel that way. And there's two sides of that. I can understand why they didn't pick up the fifth-year option. Some people were unhappy about that. And Gillislee was a big offseason flashpoint for many people. Like, how could they let that happen? Well, he's a backup running back.
Yeah, he was definitely the backup running back. And people, I think it was just more of he went to the Patriots.
Yeah.
You know, I think if he would have gone to a team outside this division, even if he went to the Jets, people wouldn't be as upset as they were that he went to the Patriots. You already had Stephon go. You already, you know, had
Hogan,
Hogan a year ago. So it was like, man, like they're taking another guy. So I think that's really what that whole thing was.
And one more thing on Aaron Schatz, and we thank him for joining us on the show. And we talked a lot in that interview with him about the 04 Buffalo Bills, how good they were, how close they were to you know, ending the playoff drought. It would have been, what, a 4 or 5 year playoff drought at that point had they gone. But he called it a choke against Pittsburgh. Was it a choke? I don't know. It certainly was a game that was in hand that they could have won. But to put that on Mike Mularkey, I have a problem with. Look, I thought back then, and I think now Mike Mularkey is a pretty good coach. I think he's demonstrating that in Tennessee right now. Mm-hmm. Certainly a good offensive mind, and was a first-time head coach when he was here. Obviously had a learning curve. I think things may have been different if Mularkey had been allowed to have Drew Bledsoe his quarterback for his second season in 05. And, you know, he walked away from here. He didn't get fired here. He walked away from here, which I think adds to a lot of the venom directed his way.
Now, so the next year, what did they – did they draft J.P. Lossman the next year?
No, Lossman was the pick in 04, right? Lossman sat for 1 year. You know, we talked to J.P. about this last year and then started the next year, basically.
Oh, okay.
05.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's tough, man, because people – they always look to blame somebody.
Right.
And usually it's either the quarterback or the head coach, you know, and so – everything people look back at that year, I guess they just say, or that game, that one game, it was like, come on, coach, you couldn't win one game. And so
against backups.
Yeah, and I get the argument against you couldn't win against the backups, but man, there's still players on the field that have to make the plays.
I don't think it was a joke, but whatever. Aaron Schatz was a good guest with some thought provoking issues on great teams of the NFL the last 30 years. We thank him for joining us. Coming up after the break, Nathan Peterman's going to join us, Buffalo's fifth-round draft pick this year, the quarterback from Pitt. He is on his way out of town, as they all are. We'll talk with Nathan Peterman about the Rookie Development Week, about mini camps, and all of that when we return. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, live at One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
Update from One Bills Drive. 6 weeks of work for Bills rookies wrapped up today, the final day of the team's rookie development program. The veterans left last week to begin their summer vacation. Rookies hit the road today. They went through conditioning work, classroom instruction, off-field advice, and orientation, and now they've scattered. Next time they assemble will be in Rochester, St. John Fisher College for training camp. The Bills' first training camp practice 5 weeks from today, Thursday, July 27th. Out west, the Raiders have agreed to a contract with Derek Carr, their sensational young quarterback. ESPN says it's a 5-year deal worth $125 million. He's now under contract through 2022. His extension's average salary of $25 million will make him the NFL's highest-paid player in terms of new money average, according to ESPN. Andrew Luck currently on top of that list. A big deal for quarterback Derek Carr with the Raiders. Hockey, last night, the new Las Vegas Golden Knights expansion team held their expansion draft. Among the players they got was former Buffalo Sabre prospect William Carrier. Carrier with 8 points in 41 games this season, his first in the NHL. Golden Knights also got goaltender Marc-Andre Fleury from the Pittsburgh Penguins. The NBA draft is tonight, coming up tonight. Philadelphia 76ers expected to make Markelle Fultz the top pick, and then the Lakers expected to choose UCLA star Lonzo Ball second. After that, there's really no consensus on how the NBA draft will go. Starts at 7 o'clock at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn, the NBA draft coming up tonight. And the Buffalo Bisons have now lost 7 straight games. Yesterday, they dropped a 3-1 game in their finale in Rochester against the Red Wings at Frontier Field. The Bisons have had trouble hitting lately. Yesterday, they only managed 3 base hits. They've had at least 4 runs in only 2 of their last 15 games. They move on to play a series at Syracuse starting tonight at 6:35. 7 straight losses for the Buffalo Bisons. John Murphy, Donald Jones, what do you think of that Derek Carr deal, Donald?
Show me the money.
Yeah.
That's what he said, man. I mean, 125. I think the crazy thing is, I think we kind of expected for him to get something like that, just because that's kind of how the market works itself out. You know, you have a guy, and Andrew Luck, who's making $24 million. Well, the next guy who gets paid wants to be higher than that. So make me a little bit higher than that, and that's what they did, put him at $25. I think now we got to watch and see what Khalil Mack gets, because he's coming up next. And he might be the highest paid player in the history of the league once he his contract is
Raiders
done.
Are going to be interesting to follow with the move coming up to Las Vegas soon, but they have their quarterback in place anyway, Derek Carr. Speaking of quarterbacks, joining us right now on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, a Buffalo Bills quarterback who is on his way to head for the hills as the rookie development camp ends. Fifth-round pick of the Buffalo Bills out of University of Pittsburgh. Happy to have Nathan Peterman on the line. Nathan, it's John Murphy and Donald Jones. Thank you very much for joining us here today. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
You're scooting, huh? You're getting out of town for a little bit? I don't blame you.
Yeah, we're actually right at the airport. Just got to the airport today right now with all the rookies, and we're all unloading the bus right now.
Where are you off to? Home to Florida, or where are you headed now for a couple weeks?
Yes, sir. Yeah, home to Florida. Going to see the family a little bit and then, you know, just get ready for training camp. Be training hard, and, you know, Donald just helped us out a little bit with what they expect for training camp, so... definitely motivated me even more, so that's good.
Now, what part of Florida do your family live in now?
Jacksonville.
Jacksonville, so will you be training in Jacksonville, or yeah, plans to go
I will,
somewhere else?
Yep. Yes, sir, Jacksonville, and a little bit in Boca where I trained kind of for pre-draft stuff too, so all over Florida.
Have you had a chance, or do you have any plans to meet up with Tyrod Taylor and then the rest of the receiving class and all you guys kind of train together, at least for like a couple days?
I don't think we've heard anything about that. I know I talked to Zay and Sammy, and they might be coming down to Orlando at some point. But, you know, if that doesn't happen, we'll just keep working and see what we can find out. I know Nick O'Leary kind of lives down in Boca as well, so that kind of helps when I'll be down there. Maybe we can get together and, connect a little bit and try to get some work in.
On the line with Nathan Peterman, Bills rookie quarterback, drafted in the fifth round out of University of Pittsburgh. The rookie development camp ended today. You talked about Donald's speech. What were some of the – I mean, I'm sure Donald was great today, but what were some of the other things that stuck with you? I mean, it's kind of a six-week orientation period to the NFL, and you've got all this football to learn too, but what about off-field stuff and becoming a pro kind of sticks with you after the rookie development camp?
Yeah, I think there's some great things in there. Obviously, Donald Zay, and then, Charles Tillman came in and talked to us as well. We was lucky to, have an all-pro come and speak to you and give you some advice. And then, all the financial stuff, they helped us with that, and the credit checks and things. And then mental, side of it, talking to a lot of guys, it seems like the mental aspect is one of the hardest parts of being in the NFL. So just if you can keep your emotions and, the roller coaster of the NFL kind of in check, and you should be good, and so that's what I'll be working on. I know this six-week program is awesome just to, get acclimated and, not only with the playbook but with your teammates and all the things that go into it. So definitely going to be working hard this offseason, though, to be ready for training camp.
Nathan, it's not as if you come from a small college program. You were in two of them, pretty big ones, Tennessee and Pittsburgh, but is it that much different, or is the approach, the kind of tenor of practice and the whole complex that much different than big-time programs you've been around in college?
Yeah, I think it is. I think I definitely prepared well for this, but, at the same time, there's only so much you can do. It's definitely a step up, and you can tell that with, the way guys approach things. And then, just the speed of the game and the talent that's on that field. So definitely just enjoyed learning from all the vets this past 6 weeks and, all the things that we got off the field as well. But, just learning on field, getting that kind of crash course into the playbook and, into the speed of the game, the rhythm of, the passing game for a quarterback as well has been good. So a lot of good things that I can take with me for this next month and go work on.
Now, how different is, this next 5 weeks? I know when you're in college, sometimes you might take summer classes, you might stay on campus and work out. How different is it for you now going home and you're going to be on your own and having to do everything on your own?
Right, yeah, a lot different, but, it's kind of something I've been excited about, being a pro for the first time, I've always believed that the only really discipline that lasts is self-discipline, and that's kind of how I've always approached things, even in my little off time when I was in college. So I'm excited for this month to have, I think it is important to have some rest, but then, to get back at it. I remember – Lorenzo kind of addressed the team before we left, told us, hey, this is, one of the most important times, and let's make sure everybody comes back the best version of yourself that you have been. So that's a goal of mine to do, to learn from the vets and just to come back ready.
On the line with Nate Peterman, Bills quarterback, the rookie who just wrapped up his six-week rookie orientation period with the Bills, including the minicamp. Nathan, I wonder, as you look back at these last 6 weeks, could you break it, quantify it, like how much was football and how much was, you know, just learning how to be a pro? I mean, is it possible to put it aside in one category? Or the other?
Yeah, there was a lot of football. I'd say probably 80-85% football, but you know, it is good to learn of the off field things and that. But you know, again, the most important thing is what's on the field. You know, it's playing ball. So a lot went into that. I mean, we were 8 to 5 every day, basically football. Then you go home and you study some more, and then wake up and you know, repeat it all. So. It is something I enjoy, definitely a crash course into it, but I learned a lot, and I know it'll help me a lot in August.
Nate, how do you feel like you did? You know, how do you feel like you did in OTAs and in the mini camps?
Yeah, I think it was a good experience for me just to get a first taste into the playbook and then on the field, you know, doing those things yourself. I mean, I thought I did some good things, but I had a lot of, you know, things that I can work on and learn from. And, you know, I think the best way to learn is making mistakes. And, you know, I wasn't perfect or anything, but, you know, I do definitely feel like I had some good plays. So just think that time was invaluable, really. I was, you know, it's crazy. You know, Tyrod and TJ Yates, they both said that they came out during the, you know, the lockout part. So they didn't have those OTAs and things. And I think that would have been pretty tough to do it at that point, because I think, you know, it was helpful to have those 6 weeks and to get on the field, make mistakes, but make some good plays as well and learn from it firsthand.
I remember my rookie year when I was going up in OTAs against different cornerbacks. It was like these dudes were like running the route with me. And I was like, man, like they are good at this level. Was there anything right. that shocked you about what the defenses do to you at this level or just how good they are?
Yeah, I think, you know, just seeing the speed of it and really, you know, defenses in college try to disguise, but – you know, you can kind of see through that as a quarterback. You know, hey, they're really just acting. But I think, you know, from what I've seen, I mean, our defense has done a great job of disguising, and they know what a quarterback's looking for. You know, certain tilts and, you know, safety rotation, pre-snap. And they know that, hey, there's some key indicators that we see. And so they'll try to give you those looks. And I think they practice those pre-snap looks as much, you know, as anything. And I think they do a good job of it. So, just learning on the fly of a post-snap and reacting to it was helpful for me to keep going through minicamp.
I wonder also, Nate, about, you know, the textbook side of it, or at least the game plan side of it, the playbook side of it is what I'm trying to say. Anything surprise you there in terms of, I mean, is it more volume than you expected? Is it more intricate than maybe what you're used to? Anything surprise you about getting a look at what the Bills playbook looks like?
Yeah, I think, you know, the playbook volume probably was the biggest surprise, but you know, at the end of the day, it's your job, and you know, I'm definitely expected to be that big, so you know, I was excited just to kind of dive into it, really learn, and especially, you know, learn from the vets. I mean, we got some great vets on our team and in that quarterback room as well, so just being able to learn from those guys and try to do my best to help the team was a great experience for me.
Did you feel at least that you were, you know, starved for reps? I mean, one of four quarterbacks on the roster, including another young quarterback, you know, alongside you just in his second year. Did you feel like, man, I need more snaps, I need more reps? And are you thinking that way going into training camp in 5 weeks?
Yeah, I mean, it's different from when you're in college and kind of the only guy, but I think the coaches did a great job. I was just happy whatever reps I got and, you know, just kind of ready to when you are on the field, when you are on film, you know, to be able to show what you can do and take advantage of the reps you have. So I was thankful for them. And, you know, really just, like I said, thankful for this time that I kind of got to learn firsthand, you know, make mistakes, make good plays. But, you know, at the end of the day, have those experiences to where I can build off of now.
Nathan Peterman, our guest, Bills quarterback, fifth-round draft pick. You were described by almost everybody before the draft and even after the Bills draft you. You were described as pro-ready, ready to play NFL football. Do you think that's accurate now based on what you've seen through a month and a half here working with the pro team?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely approach it with that mentality. You know, the coaches and things could be a better, you know, answer to that question, but I try to, you know, come and be a pro and do my best to help this organization. So, you know, whatever that is, you know, whether it's diving in the playbook, studying those extra hours, you know, I'm willing to put in the work, and I think that's, you know, just part of being a pro. So, you know, whatever I can do to do that and make this team and to earn my way, that's what I'm going to do.
How much do you feel like, I mean, you played at two big programs, so how much do you feel like now that you've gone through an OTA, at least with the pro team, playing at those programs really helped you once you got here?
Yeah, I think a lot. I mean, the discipline of those programs that was instilled in me, you know, especially by Coach Narduzzi, you know, just have, you know, good discipline and, you know, attention to detail, but also have fun with the game as well. I think that's a key component of it, too. You know, you can't try to go out there and be a robot. You still got to be able to just react and play. And, you know, that was the best part of it, too. You know, just getting a little, I guess, off subject, but, you know, with the vets, you know, I remember Pat DeMarco turning around to me the first day and saying, hey, it's the same football you've been playing since you were a little kid. And I think that was really helpful, you know, just to know that this is definitely another step up. But, you know, we've been preparing for this, and it's the same football that we've been playing. So I'm just thankful for all the experiences I had, and just going to keep getting ready for the training camp.
I mean, it's not just the fact that you played at two big programs. At least at Pitt, you played in a pro-style offense, you know. So that
for
has
sure.
to be something that helps you, which you might have over another guy who played in a totally spread offense, you know, like one of these guys that went in the first round.
For sure. I think, you know, it can help me to be kind of more acclimated to the huddle quicker. And that's certainly been helpful because I have looked guys in the eye and, you know, told them to play before and kind of got everybody on the same page. So I'm definitely very comfortable in that, very comfortable under center, hard play actions, handing the ball off, drop backs, all those things. I mean, I can certainly work on every aspect of my game, but I definitely feel comfortable in those areas as well.
Well, Nathan, you're looking at, what, 4 or 5 weeks downtime, and not totally downtime, but at least, you know, you've, and I know rookies go through this a lot, right? You had your season at Pitt, you had training, you had Senior Bowl, you had Combine, you had individual pro days, sweating out the draft, mini camp. It must feel like it's time to just kind of take a breath, I would think, for the first time in, what, a year maybe?
Yeah, it'll feel good maybe for a week or so, but, you know, I think the biggest thing Donald just told us, too, is that this shouldn't be a complete vacation for you, you know. I mean, this is an extremely important time for your career, and especially me being a rookie, you know, I want to make the best impression I can and, you know, go and do the best I can in my first training camp, and it was the same approach to OTAs as well, so. You know, there's a little downtime, but not much because, you know, I want to be ready and be able to help this team as much as I can.
Hey, Nate, is it raining out there at the airport?
It is a little bit.
I hope your flight is still on time. That would suck if your flight got delayed, right?
Yeah, but we got a little bit of time, luckily, so just get to hang out a little bit.
Okay. Nathan, have a great break. We'll see you back at back around here in a training camp in about 5 weeks. Thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Yeah, sounds good. Thank you guys for having me.
Okay. Nathan Peterman, Bill's fifth-round draft pick, the quarterback from Pitt, who's on his way home. Seriously, who can blame him, man? If you look at what they go through as rookies, what did you tell him? Not to take it easy? What did you tell these guys?
I told him, listen.
Are you going to tell me that when I go on vacation? Don't relax.
No, but as a rookie, though, this is, and for any guy in this league, I don't care if you're a rookie or a veteran, this time is the most important time for your season coming up.
What, these next 5 weeks?
These next 5 weeks, yeah, because you need to take a breath away, but that should only be like, you know, a couple days to a week. Like, you have to train. You have to be in shape once you get into training camp. If you are not in shape, that is the quickest way to find yourself out the door.
Yep.
You know, if you don't pass the conditioning test or if you're just out there looking sluggish on the field, if you didn't take notes and you don't know the playbook, you know, like those notes you need to be studying throughout these 5 weeks. And so many guys won't do it. They'll go home and just relax. You know, they might train. They won't train as hard as they did when they were here. They won't look at the playbook at all. Then they'll come back, and it's like, oh, man, I don't remember any of this stuff, you know. And so it's so important as a rookie for you to come into training camp because you only get one shot to make the team, you know. Now, you're not just trying to make this team. You're trying to make any team in this league, but you get one shot to make this team, and if you come in and make a bad impression in training camp, you might find yourself out the door. You might not get another shot.
playbook does not go home with these guys, right?
It doesn't.
Which makes sense. You don't want people losing it.
Right. They guys can lose it. Somebody else picks it up and is like, oh, this is the Bills playbook.
Right.
Like, you just
and
never
they're all
know.
Obviously the tablets, but still.
But so they need to take a lot of notes, especially quarterback. I'm sure a quarterback would take a lot of notes. Usually it's typically like, you know, the wide receivers, DBs, D linemen, guys like that, and like not taking any notes.
Did you take copious notes?
I took a lot of notes. I had the veterans talk to me a lot. George Wilson and those guys, like, hey, man, you need to make sure you're taking notes because you're not going to be able to take this playbook home, you know. So I was blessed to have that. And I told those guys, look, I hope you took notes because if you didn't take notes.
What if they did? Now you made them feel awful.
They need to feel awful. You know why? Because this is your job. And when it's your job, you need to dive fully into it, you know, and you need to make sure that you understand what it is that you're doing. And taking notes is a part of it. You know, you're in the classroom, you need to be taking notes. It's just how it is.
It's a reflex.
Right. It is a reflex. You're coming out of college, you should have been taking notes in college.
Hey, we talked a lot today about this offseason, and Nathan, first of all, a tweet on Nathan Peterman. This comes from Cynic Clinic. Peterman, just another example of McDermott's vision for the Bills. Not saying it'll work. Winning the Super Bowl takes a lot of good fortune, but we listen to these rookies, and it speaks to character and intelligence. As for me, I'm extremely encouraged, a tweet from Cynic Clinic. I mean, that's, you know, Tre'Davious the other day, Deion Dawkins yesterday. Mm-hmm. Now Nate Peterman. We've had these three draft picks. Even Zay. You guys had him last week, right?
We had him last week, yeah.
Every one of them kind of bowls you over with their intelligence and their poise, I guess. And these are only interviews.
Right, they're only interviews.
This is only discussion here. But,
yeah, we're not trying to win the media here.
Right.
We're trying to win games. But it does go a long way when these guys can handle this stuff.
Yeah.
They can handle an interview. They can handle a press conference. And you hear them in those different scrums out on the field where they have all of the media hitting them with different questions, they can handle that stuff. And I think that is big. You know, these guys understand it. They understand where they are right now, where this team is trying to go. They understand the vision. I think Coach McDermott has done a good job of just relaying that message down to everyone, including the rookies.
We talked a lot about this offseason at the top of the show. We will revisit that discussion right now if you'd like. Phone lines open at 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. As you heard, Nathan Peterman and the rookies finished up the rookie development camp today, on their way out for 4 or 5 weeks to get ready for training camp. The offseason now officially over, and a lot has gone down since January 1st. I want to hear from you. What's the most significant development in the offseason? What was the funniest development? What did you like? What were you looking for them to do in the offseason that did not get done? Give us a call, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Or you can do it via Twitter. The offseason is over. We are ranking and discussing some of the things that we've heard. You know, we talked about some of the issues, and this also goes to a post that's up at BuffaloBills.com. Among the new Buffalo Bills, the most engaging personality. You know, who just kind of bowls you over with his personality? I'm going to go back to Tre'Davious White, who, you know, we talked about it draft weekend. The smile never left his face.
Yeah.
It was hard, and he had this baby coming. That baby was born 3 days later. He seems bright. He seems high energy, very engaging, well-spoken. And he was that way after the draft and remained that way even Monday, when he was in studio with us. I just like that in a guy. I like an upbeat, positive attitude. There's no sullenness about Tre'Davious White. There's certainly no ego that appears would get in the way of his having a long and productive NFL career. There are a lot of engaging personalities on this roster, but I put Tre'Davious White right at the top of the list on my list. How about you, Donald?
Among the new Buffalo Bills, I think I'd have to go with Mike Tolbert. You know, just when we had him back on the show, back when he was first signed.
Yeah.
His personality was just like, just funny, you know, very engaging, and he seems like a true leader in that locker room, and I think that's something that they needed. I remember talking to the equipment guys that are in the locker room with these guys all the time, and I remember them saying to me, man, I remember when you guys were here, like, we could actually, you know, kind of laugh and have fun with you guys, joke, and we can just do different things with you guys. This team is a little bit different. Like, these guys don't joke with us. It's like when you say something to them, it's like, all right, thank you, and that's it. You know,
last year?
Last year's team.
Okay.
And so bringing in a guy like that where he can kind of loosen things up a little bit in the locker room, but he's still a leader and he understands what Coach McDermott is trying to get done because he came up with him from Carolina. So he's going to do what he does on the football field, but I think having him in the locker room is huge for this team.
We're kind of recapping the offseason. Started on January 2nd. The offseason as far as work here at One Bills Drive ended today. We'd like to get your thoughts on that, too. Put it in perspective for us. Jack calling from Rochester. Hello, Jack. Welcome. You're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to make a comment about my biggest surprise in the offseason.
Yeah.
And that's been this kind of clarity, the focus, and consistency about establishing a particular type of culture. I have to go way back before I could think of another Bills coach that came in with that whole mindset off the bat and who enforced it, emphasized it so consistently.
You know, Doug Marrone talked about it a lot, but I don't think he got it done in his two-year tenure here. Maybe if he had elected to stay around, he could. But Marrone made a lot of noise about changing the culture, but I don't know that he had the wherewithal to do it.
Yeah, and I think it's important to change the culture, but I think it's more important not to just talk about it, but be consistent in everything that you're doing. And I mean, with Coach McDermott, he is consistent in every little thing that he does, you know, and I think that is something that is good for your players to see, good for your rookies to see. You as the coach, be consistent. This is what I'm saying we're going to get done. It's not going to change tomorrow. It's not going to change no matter if we win today, if we lose next week, if we get blown out. This is what we are trying to get done. Everything stays consistent. I think that's big for the players.
Yeah, and not just to talk about it. And I think in many respects, Marrone kind of fell victim to that. He was big on talking about changing culture, but you know, I always thought he didn't have the right temperament to do that.
Yeah,
Marrone, you know what I mean? He was sort of negative about a lot of things. I don't get that sense at all from Coach McDermott. No. And Coach McDermott hasn't coached a game yet in the NFL. I get that. But there's sort of a up-tempo, high-energy presence around Sean McDermott that goes a long way, I think, to establishing a culture. You know what I mean?
Sean McDermott, I think, has a mixture of we are about business and we are going to handle our business. But at the same time, you know, I'm about family, too. And I'm about those core family values. And so with that, he talks to the players a lot. He still will laugh and joke with the players. He talks to them about their family, their children, different things that they have going on off the field. And that goes a long way. Like, and we talked about this before they hired Coach McDermott. Listen, don't bring a guy in here that's militant, you know, a guy that just wants to yell at the players, a guy who is negative about a lot of different things like Doug Marrone was. No, you bring a guy in here who understands, has a clear message, a clear vision, a plan. He sticks to that plan, and he lets the players know we are about business when we're in this building. But at the same time, when we're not on the field, when we're not in the classrooms, we can talk, we can laugh, we can joke. You can approach me and talk to me, you know. And if a player feels like I can't even approach this dude and talk to him, that's not a good thing, you know. I because ultimately we're in this together, you know. Yeah, you have the title as the head coach, and you can make a lot of decisions on if I'm going to be here or not. But we are coworkers, and I would like to be able to talk to you just like, you know, anybody else.
All right. Hey, we are a couple of days away from, speaking of the offseason, one of the big events that goes on here at One Bills Drive in the offseason. It is the 50-yard finish, a fundraising road race, running race that goes on all around Orchard Park. It ends up, where do you think? 50-yard line inside New Era Field.
Line.
We're going to talk to Lauren Hall about that when we return. Donald and I back with more in a moment. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
We are back. John Murphy, Donald Jones, coming to you live from One Bills Drive. We're going to resume our discussion about the Buffalo Bills and what got accomplished in this offseason, which we have officially pronounced over as of today. Joining us in studio, though, a frequent guest and one of our favorite guests. She is the multimedia journalist for the Buffalo Bills and Pagula Sports and Entertainment. Happy to have Lauren Hall here. Hi, Lauren.
Hi.
Media mogul.
Happy.
Media mogul.
Oh, my goodness.
Several platforms.
I don't know about that. Well, thank you. Happy to have it be the offseason be over.
Yes.
And now I had fun the last couple months here filming stuff with all the new rookies, all the new coaches, GMs, everyone. We had a blast.
A lot of new people.
Yeah, free agents, all that.
It's been an interesting. You've got an interesting thing coming up this weekend. The 50-yard finish, the sixth annual 50-yard finish Saturday. And as the name explains, the finish line is New Era Field, 50-yard line. Pretty
That's
cool.
That's right, 50-yard finish.
People love this event.
These are for all our runners out there. Last year we had about 1,200 people. We're hoping for about the same number again as well.
Wow.
Again, it's a 5K. It runs right around the stadium here in Orchard Park, and then it ends at the 50-yard line. The coolest part about it is your image will be broadcast over the Jumbotron as you finish the race. So it's such an awesome moment to take part in a true athletic event right here at New Era Field. You can register online, buffalobills.com/50-yard-finish for $35. The price goes up after midnight tonight. And you actually can't register online after midnight tonight. So if you still want to register, you can come tomorrow to the packet pickup here at the AdPro Sports Training Center from 4 to 7:30 in the evening, or from Saturday morning, 7 a.m. to 8:30 a.m. Shotgun start is at 9.
So they run around, and then you run down through the tunnel?
Yeah, you run through the tunnel onto the field.
Gotcha.
Impact Sports Performance is doing a pre-race warm-up and post-race cool-down. Billy Buffalo will be there. DJ Milk will be at the post-race party. Photo opportunities, all that.
He is
everywhere. He's the official One Buffalo DJ, right?
Yeah. Wow. Is Billy Buffalo running?
Billy Buffalo, I don't know. Has he been putting in his work in the offseason?
He needs to be putting in his work. Football season is coming up.
That's right.
Lord, people who run in this over the years, and as we said, this is the sixth annual, they said there's, and Donald probably can't even identify with this because he played here, but people say there's nothing like the sensation of running down that dark tunnel with the bright field at the end of it and running out onto the field with spectators in the stadium, right?
That's right. Spectators are invited. If you want to come cheer on someone that you know that's running, you can come to gate 2. Again, shotgun starts at 9, so the runners will start showing up maybe half an hour after that, and then they'll continue to show up. There also is a kids' fun run that's 1 mile long, and that's at 10:30. So if you want to run at 9, and then you want your kids to run in that, they can come and run. Oh, there I am from last year.
I'm not. I won't lie. I think I wouldn't feel right just coming to be a spectator. Like,
no.
I feel like if I came, I need to be running in this thing. At least walking, right? I can walk down the tunnel.
Can you walk in the race, the 5K?
I think you are. I think walkers are encouraged. Sure. So Donald, you can walk if you want.
How many runners will there be? Do you anticipate?
About 1,000.
Okay.
And people come from all over to do this. Last year, I was able to take part in the award ceremony. I was reading off people who were the top finishers in their age groups from all over, even as far as Hawaii.
Wow. It's a $35 registration fee, and it's a fundraiser of sorts. Where does the money go, Mark?
The money will go to the Buffalo Bills Foundation, and then we will also give some of it to the Buffalo Sports Commission Amateur Athletics Foundation. So, again, $35. If you want to sign up, you have until midnight tonight on buffalobills.com/50-yard-finish to get that $35 registration fee, and then you can still participate if you want to come early that morning on Saturday and sign up for $40. You get a T-shirt, a beer if you're 21 or up. You also get a medal if you finish. And, again, just the opportunity to take part in that post-race party right on the field.
Did you say a beer?
You get one beer if you're 21.
Have to include the alcohol.
Beer tastes that post-race beer, it tastes so different than any other type of beer.
5K race that kind of winds through the village of Orchard Park?
Kind of right around the stadium here in Orchard Park. It is a really it's such a neat opportunity, like you said, to get that sense of running down the tunnel and get your photo right on that 50-yard line. And not just standing there, but running over it, looking like you're a hero.
What's it like, Donald?
Well, when you run down the tunnel, I never ran down the tunnel. I usually walk down the tunnel, but it is something
to
like
cool
when
to
you. No, back then they didn't have rubber in that tunnel, so you would slip and
fall.
Gotta
be careful.
Yeah.
Sparks flying.
And you see linemen usually slip and fall in there. But, you know, when you first come out of the locker room and you look down and it's bright and you can hear all the fans and everything, it's an amazing feeling.
Yeah.
You know, so for fans or for people who are running in this, to have fans out there cheering them on, once you get in that tunnel, it's like, wow, like that's. That's what it feels like to come out to a football game.
That would be a little bit of that, I would think. Right?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the whole. When else can you do this? I know there's tons of races all over Western New York. We have such a vibrant running community. But what other race ends right here at New Era Field on the 50-yard line?
In Western
absolutely.
New York, the 50-yard line.
Sure
hey,
is.
Something else going on. Not football related, but pretty interesting. And it starts tonight at downtown. It's the 11-day power play. And
we always end up talking hockey when I come on.
Yeah, I know. 11-day power play.
So the 11-day power play, you may have been hearing about this. There's 40 guys here in Western New York that have volunteered to play a continuous hockey game. They're trying to break the Guinness World Record for the longest hockey game in the world. Mm-hmm. And that they're going to start tonight at 9. That's when the power play kicks off, puck drops, and they're going to keep playing until the morning drive hours of Monday, July 3rd. So they're going all out for the opening ceremonies tonight at Harvard Center. It starts at 9. They're encouraging people to come up to an hour to 2 hours early. That's because it is free, but space is limited. So if you get there early, get your seat, you can participate in lots of different kinds of raffles, get some swag. All the money they're raising through this is going to Roswell for cancer research. They're trying to raise $1 million. They're already at about 800,000, and that's before all the fundraising even starts for these next 11 days. So I'm pretty sure they're going to make it there.
I tell Murph all the time about the swag, man. The swag is important. The swag is very important. Yes. Now, is Guinness going to be there?
I'm not sure exactly how they're keeping track, but I believe someone from Guinness has to be on site the entire time. The men taking part will play for 4-hour shifts, and then they'll have 8 hours in between until their next shift, and they can't leave the premises at all. So they can't go over to the Marriott. They can't go to 716.
I think they
can go out in the parking lot, and that's it, or the parking ramp to get some fresh air. They're going to sleep in bunks right in the locker room there at Harbor Center. So they've been training for almost a year for this. I mean, this is what an intense physical.
My brother-in-law is doing it. My brother-in-law David is doing it.
And he must be so excited to get started.
Yeah, he's been
talking
about it since Christmas, really.
Can't wait until this. That's cool.
Yeah, it is pretty cool.
So Rick Donnerat's going to be there doing some play-by-play tonight as things get kicked off. They're really, like I said, they're really going all out for the opening ceremonies. There's going to be a 50-50 raffle. So if you want to stop by, it should be interesting time at all. And you don't have to come tonight. You can come at any time throughout the 11 days.
It ends July 3rd.
Monday, July 3rd. In the morning.
That'll be cool when they break the record. I mean,
Is the record right now? 10 days?
I think they have it down to the hour. I think they're just trying to beat it by 1 hour. So they have it. It's 250 plus. And it was, I'm forgetting the town that holds the record right now. It's a Canadian town. So, but I think they just added about an hour onto that.
They'll be ready when they beat that record. Time to go. I don't want to sleep in this smelly locker room.
I don't know, Donald, if you've ever smelled hockey equipment that has been worn.
Football equipment is bad.
Hockey's worse.
Is it? Interesting.
Oh, yeah, the pads and everything. Oh, brutal. And
let alone, I mean, that's for an average game. This is the world.
11 days.
So one they're more trying to raise $1 million for Roswell. So.
Amazing. And it's tonight. What time tonight?
9 o'clock is when puck drops. Okay. But I think they'll start getting a little crowd starting around 7:30. Okay. So
one more time around for the 50-yard finish, which is Saturday.
Saturday morning shotgun start at 9 o'clock. Kids fun run is at 10:30. BuffaloBills.com/50-yard finish if you want to sign up tonight. $35 through midnight, and then if you want to do on-site registration that morning, just goes up to $40. All the money goes to Buffalo Bills Foundation and the Buffalo Sports Commission Amateur Athletics Foundation.
You stay busy in the off season. I appreciate that.
But having so much fun. Looking forward to we'll be at St. John Fisher in no time, right?
That's right. 5 weeks from today. Practice.
Cannot wait.
Lauren, thanks. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks.
Lauren Hall is the multimedia journalist for the Bills and for Pagoula Sports and Entertainment, talking about the 50-yard finish coming up Saturday. You can go to BuffaloBills.com to register or get more information. Donald and I back with more in a moment. John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts. Live at One Bills Drive, this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Thanks again to Lauren Hall for joining us. Always, she does a lot, man. She's very versatile. She's all involved in the 11-day power play and the 5K run, the 50-yard finish on Saturday.
She's a mogul.
A media mogul all over the place. But thanks to her for joining us. And again, you can go to BuffaloBills.com for more information on the 50-yard finish. We got a tweet in from 716 who has sent in a picture. He said last year's 50-yard finish, a picture of himself with Cardale Jones. He said it was a great time, and Cardale is a big quarterback.
He is. Cardale's definitely a big quarterback. But it really does. When we watch the video for the people who are watching on the MSG side, it looks like a good time out there. People cheering you on. And if you're a runner, I mean, people actually travel. The one thing over the last couple of years, I didn't realize how big that subset of people are, runners, people that actually do 5Ks all over the country, all over the world. And so you have people traveling in, she said, from Hawaii to run in Buffalo, to cross, finish up at the 50-yard line.
It's a pretty good deal for them. And it's coming up Saturday. You can register online at BuffaloBills.com. Donald and I talking a lot about the end of the offseason. We have proclaimed it over as of today because the Bills rookies finished their rookie development program today. Everybody scatters 5 weeks from today. Training camp opens up. Some of the highlights of the offseason, some of the significant things that happened in the offseason. Give us a call. We'd like to talk about it with you. 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. The high points, the low points, what they left on the table, the offseason officially over. We are ranking and discussing significant developments. There's a post up on BuffaloBills.com about this. How about this one, Donald? We have, you know, we've had some guests come through here during the offseason who said something that, I, you know, frankly surprised me. What about the best revelation about the new coaching staff? What's something that you heard from the coaching staff that surprised me? One of my favorite coaches, new coaches on the staff, is Juan Castillo, who has been here before, 20, 25 years ago. But he's been in the league for 23 years. And remember, he sat right over there back in late May and talked about how a couple of years ago they had Juan Castillo Day in his hometown, Port Isabel, Texas, down near Brownsville. And first of all, he said, you know, I got a sister who's a doctor. They shouldn't be honoring me. They should be honoring her. But then he went on to talk about how he saw it not a day for him to be honored, but more he used it as a day to thank the folks who helped him growing up. He said, my father passed away. My mom raised us. And I wanted to thank the people who helped my mom. Grocery store gave us credit. Pharmacy giving us credit because we didn't have the money. He said he used that Juan Castillo Day in Port Isabel to go back and thank the folks who helped him grow up in his formative years back there in the Gulf Coast side of Texas. I thought that was a really good story, and I thought it was it said a lot about Juan Castillo's character. That was one of my favorite parts of the offseason so far.
Yeah, he's a good character. He's a good guy to talk to. He will tell you a lot about himself when you do talk to him. Seems very upbeat all the time, positive thinker most of the time, if not all of the time. I think I had to go with when we heard that Coach McDermott had a wrestling mat in his house.
Yeah.
And I was like, what? Like, the fact that you bought a wrestling mat and put it in your house is, you know, that just goes to show how important, well, he wrestled, but his kids wrestle, and how important family is to him, you know, and he wants to make sure that when he is not coaching, when he's not working, he can do the things with his kids that, you know, that he'll enjoy and that his kids will enjoy. And the fact that he wrestled, his kids wrestle, that's something that I'm sure they love to do together. They probably compete back and forth. And then when we heard that, I think Brandon Bean, maybe his kids, did they wrestle against Coach McDermott's kids or something like that?
Yeah, I think he was kind of teaching them, coaching them wrestling, right?
Yeah.
Brandon's
so
son.
The fact that he has a wrestling mat in his home and the fact that, you know, those guys had that relationship and he was teaching the kids how to wrestle.
A lot of good stories coming out, many of them here on the show. How about best off-field story during these 6 months or so of the offseason? For my money, hard to beat Sharice Wright and his Uber drive, 550 miles and $600 or more dollars, and met this guy in Chicago at the airport who drove him all the way to Buffalo. The guy thought he was taking him to Buffalo Wild Wings. No, I'm going to Buffalo, New York. And he got him here 2 minutes before the meeting started. Sharice was not late. That story went viral in an instant, and Sharice found himself on ESPN. He was a national celebrity. To me, that really was one of the greatest stories I've heard in a long time, and I think the best off-field story we heard all year.
Yeah, that is a guy to take an Uber that far. I mean, I'm telling you, if I was a driver, I would have canceled. I'm not – where? No, I don't care how much I'm getting paid. You want me to drive to
right
Buffalo?
Away.
Yeah, like, oh, I thought you meant Buffalo Wild Wings. You know, I probably would have looked at the map because, you know, when you get into the Uber, they have the phone where they can see, you know, what time you're going to be there. And as a driver, I'd have looked at it like, wait, where are we going? And he's like, Buffalo, New York. Oh, no, I'm sorry, man. You want me to drop you off somewhere else? Because, nah, I'm not taking you all the way to Buffalo. But I think for me, I was proud of Cardale Jones going back to school and graduating college. You know, we had him on the show, and he was talking about how he wanted to go back and finish his degree. And then when I heard that he graduated, it was like, man, that's what's up, man. I love to see guys go back and finish their degrees. And so for him to go back to Ohio State and finish his degree, for me, that's one of the biggest stories.
Especially when Cardale, during his time at Ohio State, sort of, I forget what the incident was, but he sort of poo-pooed the idea of getting a degree. It was like, hey, we're not here to go to school.
Yeah, we're here to play football.
We're here to play football. Well, as it turns out, he did both. He played football and got his degree.
Right. You know, you can only give a guy like that his props, especially, like you said, when he says something like that, whether it was in a joking manner or not, when he goes back and he finishes that degree, that's a big thing for him. I'm proud of him for doing it.
And he kind of made fun of himself, I think, too, right?
Yeah, because so many guys will do it once they're done playing. you know, and here's a guy who went back in his offseason to finish it out, you know, and I think that's a plus. Guys will wait until they're done playing, and then it's like, all right, let me go back to school. Well, you have time in your offseason to get it done, you know, so go ahead and get it done.
He got it done, and we'll see what happens as they get to a training camp in 5 weeks. The Bills' offseason is officially over as of today around noon when they decided that once Donald Jones came and talked to the rookies today, there's nothing more that needed to be said.
Yeah, Coach McDermott approached. I should have dropped the mic. I didn't have a mic, though. I only had.
How many guys? Like 25, 30 guys?
Something like that, yeah.
You didn't have a mic?
The whole rookie class. No, I didn't have to. We were in the small DB room.
Okay.
And so I didn't have to, you know, talk that far or anything like that. I probably should have had a mic so I can wake those guys up. They seemed like they were in tune, though. They were paying attention, especially once I started to talk about my kidney disease and how football ended that fast. You know, when it's going to happen, I'm like, listen, guys, at some point we all get cut. So you are all going to receive a call, or they're going to come and get you at your locker and say, listen, the GM wants to see you, or the GM is going to call you and say, so-and-so, we're sorry to have to do this. We love what you did for the organization, but, you know, the team has to move forward. And so the biggest thing, one of the biggest things I talked about was networking. Like, network. Guys, you have to work on your life after football. And you need to do it while you're here, you know. And I even talked about, you know, me being back here in the media because when I was here, you know, I would come to the other side of the building and talk to people on that side of the building and just build those relationships with those people, you know. And so many of the players don't do it. So many of the players, they come into the locker room, the meeting rooms, on the field, and then they're gone. They never go upstairs aside from eating breakfast and lunch. They don't talk to anybody else, you know, and at some point when your career is over, you're going to need something to do.
Yeah.
You know, and if you build those relationships, it could be somebody who you might just have a friendship or somebody who helps you out in the long run.
Yeah, somebody at least on the top of somebody's mind.
Right.
Speaking of careers and long careers, we're going to talk in a minute or two with one of the all-time most popular Buffalo Bills who still wants to play. In fact, Fred Jackson's going to play in the Spring League Showcase game in about a month. Out west in San Francisco, Fred Jackson, not ready to hang it up yet. He'll join us live when we return. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. We're at One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network, sports update.
Here at One Bills Drive, 6 weeks of work for rookies wrapped up today. It was the final day of the rookie development program. The veterans, of course, left last week to begin their summer vacation. Bills rookies went through conditioning drills this week, classroom instruction, off-field advice, orientation, and now they've scattered. Next time they assemble will be in Rochester, St. John Fisher College for training camp, and the Bills' first training camp practice 5 weeks from today, Thursday, July 27th. Out west, big news from the Oakland Raiders. They have finalized their contract extension with quarterback Derek Carr. He tweeted out that the deal is done. Adam Schefter of ESPN says it's a 5-year deal worth $125 million. It makes Carr under contract through 2022. His average salary under the extension, $25 million, will make Derek Carr the NFL's highest paid player in terms of new money average. Colts quarterback Andrew Luck currently tops the list at $24.6 million. Hockey last night, the Las Vegas Golden Knights, the brand new expansion team in the NHL, put together their roster. They took William Carrier from the Buffalo Sabres, a 22-year-old forward with 8 points in 41 games in the NHL. They also took goaltender Marc-Andre Fleury, who just won a Stanley Cup with Pittsburgh. Fleury was on hand for last night's ceremony, the NHL awards ceremony, and he is now with the Las Vegas Golden Knights. NBA draft is tonight, 7 o'clock. The Philadelphia 76ers with the first selection. They're expected to go with Markelle Fultz with the first pick, and then barring surprises, the Lakers expected to pick UCLA star Lonzo Ball. After that, things might get a little interesting. The draft starts at 7, going to be held at Barclays Center in Brooklyn. The Buffalo Bisons lost their seventh straight game yesterday afternoon. They lost in Rochester by a score of 3-1. The Herd managing only 3 base hits in that game. They've had at least 4 runs in only 2 of their last 15 games. A shortage of firepower for the Bisons. They move on to head to Syracuse to take on the Chiefs for a game tonight. 6:35 first pitch in Syracuse. And that's the update from One Bills Drive, the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. We are live at One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Donald Jones, and joining us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, one of arguably the most popular Buffalo Bill in the last decade or so, who is not ready yet to hang him up. Happy to have Fred Jackson on the line with us. Fred, John Murphy, Donald Jones, we saw you here a couple of weeks with Jim Kelly's golf tournament. You've been in and out of Buffalo a couple of times over the last few weeks. It's good to see you these last few weeks.
Oh, man, it's really good to get back out there, and I appreciate you guys having me on the show.
The spring game, the spring league showcase coming up July 10th through the 15th, Fred. You are in at age 36. Tell us about that decision.
Oh, man, it's one of those things that, you know, I feel like I can still contribute on the field, and I think this is just a way to show that. This is going to be an opportunity to go out and, you know, show some teams that, you know, I'm 36, but I can still move around on the field pretty well. And if they need me, they can bring me in, and I'll be able to give them my talents and help them win some games.
Fred, sorry about that. Donald Tootie J here.
Mm-hmm. Tootie J.
Have you been training this entire time, or have you taken time off and now you're getting back into training? How's it been going?
I've been doing some things on and off here the entire time, you know, but I've kind of picked up last couple of months, you know, just trying to get ready for, you know, if something happened this off season. But it's one of those things that I haven't really taken any time off. I was trying to play last year, so I was staying in it then. So it hasn't been hard for me to make that transition into picking it up full time now.
The Spring League Showcase is not just one game, right, Fred? It's like a six-day event out in Northern California. Tell us, what did you sign up for here? What is this all about?
It is. It's a six-day event where we go out there and we go through basically a five-day training camp like we would if we were on any NFL team. And then at the end of it, we have a game. So I think it's just going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be a lot of guys out there trying to, you know, do exactly what I'm doing, you know, showcasing that they can compete and play at a high level. So it's going to be, you know, great energy. A lot of guys, you know, laying it out on the line, and it's going to be a lot of fun to compete with those guys.
Are you going to be the oldest guy on the roster out there, Fred?
I'm sure I will be. You know, that's not uncommon. You know, I've been the oldest guy on you know, rosters for about 4 years now, so I don't expect that to change.
Now, there are a lot of other guys that have played in the league that have some names that are playing in this game with you. Have you had a chance to speak to any of them?
Not yet, but that's something I think as the time gets closer, you know, I'll reach out to some of those guys like Booby. You know, we all know Booby Dixon. He'll be somebody that I'll reach out to and just ask him, you know, how he's going to approach it and what he's looking forward to doing and things like that. So it'll be a lot of fun to get out there and compete on the field with Booby again. You know, he was a lot of fun to, you know, play with when he was in Buffalo, and I was as well. So it'd be fun to get back out there with him.
Yeah, Booby Dixon actually did the Spring League, right, in West Virginia, this thing they did back in, what, March and April, I want to say. He was there, right?
I believe so. So it'd be good to pick his brain and see what to expect.
What do you expect? First, did I read, is Donnie Henderson one of the coaches out there at this?
Yep, Donnie is one of the coaches. You know, I talked to him the other day. He said it's going to be a great experience and something that I'll enjoy.
And who else do you know that's going to be on this in the Spring League Showcase week?
Right now, as far as I know, it's going to be Donnie is somebody that I know. Booby and Greg Hardy is supposed to be out there.
Oh, so, yeah.
You know, I know he's trying to do whatever he can to get back in the league too. So it'd be interesting to see how it goes down out there.
Now, I mean, going into this thing, do you have any expectations or goals that you're trying to set for yourself?
You know, it's the number one thing for me is just to go out and, you know, enjoy it, you know, have fun doing it. You know, anytime you get to lace up the cleats and go out and be on the football field, I think you got to take advantage of that and have fun doing it. So that's the number one thing. And, you know, number two is just show teams that I can still play, you know, be able to make some plays when I'm out there. And if there's any, you know, NFL execs that are out at the camp and at the game watching, you know, put on a show for him so, you know, I can, you know, put some of that he's too old to play to rest. So that's the number one thing or number two thing that I'm going to try and do.
I guess there were scouts and a lot of NFL people around the Spring League in West Virginia, and I read that they're going to make, you know, video available, so any teams that might be interested in who's playing out there in the showcase next month will be able to get their hands on video and see for themselves if they can't get out there, huh, Fred?
Yep, and I think that's what they're trying to do for all the guys that want to play at that next level. So they're doing a tremendous job with it, and, you know, it's one of the reasons I signed up to do it. Is, you know, I've been saying that I want to get back in and this is just another opportunity to showcase myself.
Do you have to go in like a week early, 2 weeks early? How are you going about that? When do you guys have to report?
Get the itinerary tomorrow. You know, I'll find out. I think we'll probably be there, if I'm guessing, we'll be there 1-2 days early just to kind of get the feel of what's going to happen. And then, you know, take it from there. You know, it's one of those things, you know, after being in the league for 10 years and going to training camps, nothing's going to surprise me. So I'll be ready to go.
Are the practices padded practices with contact, Fred, or they take it easy on you a little bit?
No, I would assume that we're going to have some kind of padded practices just so, you know, guys could get into that mindset of going out there and competing in the game. So, but we'll see. You know, it's one of those things that, you know, I'm flying kind of by the seat of my pants right now. I don't know exactly what to expect, but, you know, I'll be ready for whatever we have to do.
Fred, how hard is it for you, a guy who played so long in the NFL and played at a pretty high level, done a lot of things for this organization out in Buffalo, for you to now go and play in a game like this and not even say to yourself, man, I'm above this, you know, and think like that?
Yeah, and that's just it. You know, I come from a background, you know, where I've had to, you know, work hard to get to wherever I was anyway. So for me, it's just about putting in the work. And I think, you know, this is just another part of, you know, that story is doing whatever you have to show that you can compete at that level. And, you know, it's nothing new to me. So for me, you know, I'm just enjoying it. You know, if nothing comes from it, nothing comes from it. You know, it's an opportunity, like I said, to lace up my cleats and put on some shoulder pads and go knock some heads for a few hours. And, you know, if that's what it is, then that's what it is. And, you know, you move on from that.
How hard, Fred, have you been trying over a couple of years now, or at least a little bit more than a year, to get back into the NFL? How close did you get with teams?
Oh, well, I mean, it's been a combination of a few things. You know, I actually got a phone call from Rex, would have been last year, going into training camp, telling me to be ready. He was bringing me in, and it just kind of fell through. So, you know, I was supposed to be back in Buffalo last year. That didn't happen. Then I was talking to, you know, Oakland, San Diego, you know, a bunch of different teams here and there. And, you know, nothing just ever happened or came from it. So it's been one of those things where, you know, I've been in the mindset that, you know, something's going to happen and just stay ready in case it does. And when it didn't, you know, it just didn't happen. So I got 10 years in, which was 10 years longer than I was supposed to play in the league. So I always kind of just fell on that. And I mean, a 10-year career is great for anybody, and they'll let you know that if they had an opportunity to play in the NFL.
When I think back, I wonder if the call from Rex, the call from the Bills, was when they eventually settled on Reggie Bush last summer, right, in August? Was that about when they called you?
Yep, that was exactly what happened. You know, it was he called me and said that he wanted me to come in and, you know, and compete for the backup running back job. And then there was other decisions that were made to go with Reggie, you know, and that's just how that played out. And, you know, for me, it just was one of those things where I just tried to move on to the next opportunity.
How sweet would that have been to get back here last year, even as disappointing as last year was for the team?
Oh, man, it's would have been the icing on the cake for me in my career is to have a chance to finish out, you know, playing in Buffalo, you know, in front of the Bills fans again. And, you know, if that was the case, we wouldn't be where we are today. You know, I just want to get one more year in, and then to have that opportunity to play last year would have done it for me. And I would have laid it all out on the line. And like I said, it would have just been the icing on the cake.
Fred, I want to now kind of shift things to one of your friends. He's been doing a lot of bike riding lately. He almost got hit by a bus out in, like, Scotland somewhere. then he took another bike ride with, like, 500 people. But Marshawn Lynch, and coming back, I'm sure you've had a chance to talk to him. How's he liking being in Oakland Raider?
Oh, man, he's loving every minute of it. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, if it wasn't Oakland, it wasn't going to happen. And, you know, with them moving to Vegas, he said he wanted to get back to Oakland and play for them and, you know, give the kids of Oakland somebody that they can look up to one more time. And, you know, I think he is the perfect person for that. You know, he represents Oakland, you know, to the fullest. He has it tatted on his chest. And, you know, he eats, sleeps, dreams, and drinks Oakland. So, you know, he's loving every minute that he has out there, and I think he couldn't ask for a better story, you know, to write for himself.
How's he feeling physically now going through an OTA? I think I read that he wasn't doing much in OTAs, but I did see a good run out of him. So how's he feeling physically?
No, I mean, like he can go out there and do everything he did before. So he's feeling great. You know, like you said, he doesn't do a lot during OTAs, and he hadn't been doing a lot during OTAs in the latter part of his career. So nothing's changed, but he'll be ready to go once, you know, that ball is snapped in the regular season. He'll be out there ready to compete with anybody.
Right. When you see how Oakland, obviously his hometown, embraces Marshawn, and how the folks in Seattle did, and you were here for Marshawn's tenure in Buffalo, do you think folks in Buffalo, fans in Buffalo, just did not get Marshawn Lynch, especially the young, just out of college version of Marshawn Lynch?
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, that's everywhere. You know, in defense of, you know, Buffalo, you know, he might not have represented, you know, himself to the best of his abilities when he was there. So, but, you know, I think anybody that knew Marshawn and had any kind of relationship with him, you know, when he was here in Buffalo, loved him. You know, he was a guy that the exact same guy that he is was in Seattle and that he is in Oakland. You know, nothing's changed. You know, he's still that same man that, you know, cares deeply for anybody that's close to him and puts it all out there on the line for him. So, that's why people love him and what he does and what he's about. You know, he's showing that by going back to Oakland and coming out of retirement to go compete for, you know, the young generation of Oakland fans. So, you know, he's a great guy, and, you know, I think anybody that knows him personally, you know, will vouch for that.
Marshawn is what, 31?
31. Yeah,
31 years old. You think he can carry the load out there, Fred?
Without a doubt. You know, there's no question in my mind, and, you know, I'm excited to see what he does this year just because, you know, he's hungry again. You know, he wants to be the guy that helps Oakland get over the top and the guy that, you know, they can lean on and hand the ball, you know, 20, 25 times a game. And, you know, along with that passing attack that him and or Derek Carr and those guys have out there, I think they're going to be pretty formidable.
We're on the line with Fred Jackson, former Bills running back, 9 seasons here, 10 years in the National Football League, getting ready to play in the Spring League Showcase game next month in Napa, California. Marshawn is 31, as Donald just said. You are 36, Fred. What makes you think you can do what most people can't, play football well at age 36, play running back well at age 36?
You know, it's one of those things when you look at the touches that I have compared to, you know, Marshawn. Marshawn probably has, you know, I don't know, twice as many carries and, you know, twice as much workload as I had my entire career. So there's still some tread on these tires, you know, and if I didn't feel that was the case, you know, I wouldn't be out here trying to do that. You know, when I went to Seattle, I didn't get a lot of workload. You know, they had a young back in Thomas Rawls that was, you know, playing out of his mind. So I didn't get a heavy workload when I was there. And, you know, I still feel like I can contribute to this game. And the best way for me to do that is, or the best way for me to show that is to get out here in this game and show so.
Do you feel like there's something that you need to prove? Is that why you're trying so hard to get back into football?
You know, I don't think there's anything that I need to prove. I just, you know, love to play. You know, it's one of those things that, you know, I've loved playing this game, and I think every play that I had on the field, I showed that, you know. And I feel like one more year would be, you know, great for me. And, you know, I think that's all I need is the one year to get out here and, you know, move around and compete at that level one more time. And then, you know, I'll be able to ride off into the sunset and be happy with, you know, what I've accomplished in the league.
Well, as you know, people here root for you. I mean, you feel it, I'm sure. You get back to town, you're here for Kelly's tournament and the Buffalo News event. You have the steakhouse, the interest in Sears Steakhouse downtown, right? So it's not as if you've cut ties with Buffalo. You're around here quite a bit, right?
Oh, yeah. You know, Buffalo is home, you know, and that's always going to be the case. You know, I'm going to be back in Buffalo as much as possible. You know, Buffalo has meant a tremendous amount to me. And the fan base out there, I couldn't ask for, you know, a better fan base to call home and be proud to have played for. You know, those guys always show me love. And for me, it's returning that favor Anytime that I see anybody in public and wants to come take a picture, I'm happy to do so because of all the things that they've done for me.
Well, you got the whole area rooting for you, Fred. I hope this goes well in a couple of weeks, and we'll check back in with you. Hopefully, maybe you get signed with somebody else before training camp. That'd be great, right? That's the goal.
That is the goal, and you know, I hope it happens. So we'll see what goes on in the next few weeks. And I appreciate you guys having me on. It's always great to talk to you guys.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Fred Jackson, Bills running back, getting set to play in the Spring League Showcase. It's a 3 weeks away, July 10th through the 15th. The game, it winds up with a regulation NFL game, NFL rules game, but it's a six-day event for professional football talent, former collegiate and NFL players, joint practices, instruction from professional-level coaches like Donnie Henderson. They shoot video, one-on-one and teamwork video, and make it available to all the NFL and CFL teams.
What day is it?
July 10th through the 15th.
July 10th through the 15th.
Fred is a friend of yours, a former teammate of yours.
Mm-hmm.
Is this a pipe dream, or could this really happen? Ooh,
no, I mean, I think if he can go out there and show that he can play against those guys, there are going to be other guys that have played in the NFL, you know, and so that's all he wants to do is just show, look, because I don't think he – even though he said he wants to get signed, he would love to just get signed. But Fred is probably like, shoot, if I got signed after training camp, I'll take that. You know, I don't have to go to training camp. But, you know, he just wants to go out there and prove that he can still get it done. So if somebody goes down or you need somebody to fill in, give me a call. You know, you've seen what I did in this game.
Right, here's fresh tape.
Right. You know, this is fresh tape of me still going off on guys or still just getting it done. And if you need a guy, which is going to happen at some point in the season, a running back is going to go down, and Fred wants to show these guys, look, here's the freshest tape that you have, and I can still get it done. You know that. You know my history. You know that it's not like I'm a rookie coming in here and I'm going to be in shock or anything like that. You know I can get it done. So give me a call.
I'm reluctant to ask this question. Fred is a friend of yours, and I consider him a friend. Is he putting himself at risk health-wise? To be out there in what's going to be some full contact practices against guys who are trying to make a name for themselves and get to the NFL. What's he putting at risk here?
I think as a football player, you kind of know the risk. You know, even if you're a rookie in this thing, there's a risk anytime you step on that field and you lace up those cleats, put those pads on.
This is a 36-year-old man.
So if he was to get hurt, it might not heal as quickly as if he was a rookie or something like that. But I think he understands that risk, you know. And I think as a football player, as a competitor, it's you kind of put that risk aside and you just go out there and you play football, you know. And if something like that was to happen – all right, I knew I was playing the game. I knew this could happen, so I think he's okay with that.
Do you think he feels like he has something left to prove?
I mean,
he fought and scratched and clawed his way, playing in Europe, playing in Arena League, indoor football, just barely hung on with the Bills early on. I think he did almost a year in a practice squad. He demonstrated that he could work his way undrafted onto a roster.
He definitely demonstrated that. I honestly think it's sometimes – it's just hard to give it up, you know, and that's for any athlete. I've read different things on the psyche of athletes and how hard it is for guys to give it up. Fred has done a lot in this league. He played, 10 years in the NFL, you know, and was very productive for this organization and then had another chance once he went out to Seattle, you know, and I think he played in a playoff game with them, I believe, you know. So he even got a chance to play in the playoffs. So you would think, for a lot of us, we would think, like, man, how come he won't just give it up? But it is so hard to give it up. You want to play, especially if you feel like, and I think truly in his mind, he feels like I still have at least one more year left in the tank. Like, I can still get it done for one more year. And it's just hard when you feel that way.
Interesting revelation, I think it was. I don't think I've heard Fred at least talk about the fact that the Bills reached out to him last summer.
I never heard that.
It must have been when McCoy got hurt in training camp, and they eventually brought in Reggie Bush, but he said Rex Ryan called him and said, be ready, we're thinking about bringing you in.
And the reason they probably ended up going with Reggie Bush is just because the return ability, I would think. When they looked at Reggie and said, okay, we know he can play running back, but we want to bring him in to also help out in the return game. That wasn't something that you would bring Fred in for. At this age, you would probably bring Fred in as a number two, number three back, short yardage, more type of stuff. And so – you know, I guess because Reggie had that return ability, they decide to go with Reggie.
Yeah. I hope it works out for him. I hope he stays healthy.
I hope he does too.
I hope it works out for him.
I hope he can stay healthy, and I hope he goes out there and he just lights it up, you know, and I hope he does get a shot. I hope that he goes out there, he lights it up, and that a team does call him, and so that he can scratch that itch. It's so hard to give it up, though.
Fred Jackson joining us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Subway, eat fresh. Fred's going to play in the Spring League Showcase, the week's worth of practices out west in San Francisco area, and then play in the game on July 15th.
Now,
so keep an eye out for that.
He hasn't played the game now in over a year.
Yep.
And so, you know, this is also, I think, for him, if he gets out there and his body's not responding like he feels like it can respond, then in his mind, he can say to himself, all right, I don't have it anymore, you know, and I can give this thing up. I think right now he feels like, okay, I've been training, I've been working out, but he truly doesn't know because he hasn't played football. He hasn't laced it up, put pads on for a year, you know. And so if he goes out there and his body's just not responding the same way, he doesn't have any quickness, any burst or anything like that going through those holes, or he gets hurt, you know, and at that time he might say, you know what, forget this, I'm done.
Hasn't played in, it'll be 18 months. He hasn't played since the Seahawks in the playoffs in January of 2016. 18 months.
18 months.
At age 36. We wish him well. I hope it works out. Donald and I spent a lot of time today talking about this Bills offseason. We consider the offseason over now with the end of the rookie development camp, and we're going to talk more about that after the break. We're also going to get to fake news, real news. Want to hear from you about Fred Jackson or about the Bills offseason, what went well, what didn't go as well as you had hoped. What's still missing? Any of that. We're cleaning up loose ends about the Bills offseason. So come on back and give us a call, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Back to the show, John Murphy, Donald Jones. We are live at One Bills Drive, a half hour to go. No Twitter poll today, but we do want to engage you in discussion as we recap the offseason that began on January 2nd. A couple of days later, Rex Ryan was gone. A new coach comes in. A new general manager comes in. Free agents come and go. Tyrod Taylor gets a contract extension. Draft picks. What else happened?
You know, it's really dawned on me. We complained a lot about nothing going on around here.
It seems like there was a lot going on. There was a lot going on here. Too much whining is going on. Because we had a lot of news this offseason.
Yeah, we did.
And, there were times when the news was just almost too much to handle. Mm-hmm. And then other times when it was dead. And today's one of the dead days. And so we're recapping. No, today, the day that's significant today is that the rookie development camp is over. The rookie development program ended today. And that, you know, now we are into the dead period for the next 5 weeks or so. The Bills report to training camp 5 weeks from now. By the way, tomorrow's show, Fred Smirlis is going to join us to talk about the Buffalo Bills top 10 defensive players, that series that's on MSG on Monday night. So Freddie's with us tomorrow night. But today we want to talk with you about the Bills offseason. What did you think of it? What's still left hanging on the table? What did they not get done? And what did get done? What was the most significant thing? What was the most memorable thing? What's your favorite part of the offseason? Lines are open, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550. Part of this, the result of a post that's up on BuffaloBills.com right now, the top 10 superlatives that best describe the 2017 Bills offseason. Chris Brown and I participated in that a little bit. And a lot of stuff that went on, including, let me see, what have we not touched on? We've touched on a lot of stuff. I'm looking on the rundown.
We did touch on a lot of stuff. We had, like, best John Murphy Show guests.
Yeah.
You know, players we hope to stand out.
Here's one. Player you most want to see stand out when the pads come on in 5 weeks. Who are you looking for to make, do you really want to see jump out at when camp starts in 5 weeks? Who do you got?
I want to see Zay Jones stand out in camp. You know, he got hurt in OTAs, so he wasn't there for most of OTAs. He came back, the last week, which was the mini camp, and he looked good out there, but I want to see him now stand out. You know, and they drafted him in the second round for a reason. And I want to know if he can be the number two receiver on this team or not. So he's going to be a guy that I'm looking to stand out and make plays consistently in camp And if he can, I think he will take over that number two spot.
Doesn't he get any ramp-up time, any time to kind of find his legs and get used to the NFL, or has he got to stand out right away?
I don't think he really gets ramp-up time.
Okay.
Nobody gets ramp-up time. You know, you don't really get ramp-up time. When you get to camp, you need to be in shape, and you need to be ready to go. You know, the coaches don't have time to allow you, even though you're a rookie, they don't really have time to, especially when you get drafted in the second round. Like, the coaches, the fans don't really care about ramp-up time. They want to see him, is this dude going to be our number two receiver or not? You know, so I think the coaching staff might have a little bit more leeway, but at the same time, he's going to have to come out and perform right away.
Guy I'm going to look for early in camp and throughout camp is the guy that I've described as the most important man on the roster, Marcell Dareus.
Just the big stuff.
Needs to come back in shape, needs to come back with the same focus and drive that he demonstrated during the spring workouts. And why not do it right at the start of camp? He needs to, you know, stay healthy and stay straight during these 5 weeks leading up to camp, and then he needs to come to camp and go to work. People have been patient with Marcell Dareus, the Bills in particular, very patient. But the patience, you would think, is running thin. It's a brand-new staff, coaches and personnel staff that didn't draft him, hasn't coached him before, and I think they want to see him come out of the gate strong when camp opens up in 5 weeks. He seemed like he was ready to do that when we had him in here last week talking about it, but that's a guy that my eyes are going to go to as soon as camp opens in 5 weeks.
Yeah, hopefully he's in his zen.
Yes.
Once we get to camp, you know, hopefully he's ready to go, and that carries over into the regular season. He does need to stand out, though, once he gets to camp. He needs to just – and it's like he just needs to show the quickness and show that he's engaged in everything. You know, yeah. It's going to be camp, so, you know, he might make some plays.
Camp's tough, right? It's drudgery.
Yeah.
There's heat. There's boredom.
Yeah, there's a lot of boredom. You're
tramping around from the dorms. It's only 3 weeks, but dorms to field to training room, back to the dorms and the meeting room, eating in the same place, seeing the same faces.
All the time.
Right?
Yeah.
Isn't that the worst part of training camp, just the drudgery of it?
It is. It's first of all, being down there away from your families, you know, being down there for 3 weeks in college dorms, you have guys that are making millions of dollars. They're like, all right, I got to go stay in a college dorm. I got to take a TV from home down there. I got to take some sheets and everything. I mean, you have guys that order a new mattress. You know, you're in a college dorm, so you have that side of it. You're eating in the same place, seeing the same guys from when you wake up to when you go to bed every day for 3 weeks. It is not an easy thing, you know. And so, yeah, that's tough. So you want to see him stay engaged in it and be engaged the entire training camp. Once he gets to preseason games, I don't know how much he's going to play. That's what we don't know yet is Coach McDermott's plan of this is how I want to run the preseason games. The first game, I want our guys to play two series, three series. The second game, this much. You know, this is going to be things that we have to pay attention to. Marcell might be a guy who he wants to see play a little bit more than others. I don't know.
I got one more. We got a lot of time to talk about camp over the next 5 weeks, but one camp question for you that's always struck me, and I see the drudgery. I get it, you know, the sameness, the classroom work, the practice fields, the cafeteria food, which is really good, but it's the same stuff. On the other hand, and you can speak to this as a former player, if someone told me, hey, for 3 weeks you can go away with some of your best friends and get away from everything, work hard, but also, you know, maybe sneak out and play golf once in a while, maybe kind of do your thing and hang with your friends for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Is there anything at all to be said for that, or is it all just awful?
I think it's awful. I think the first 2 days of camp are fun, you know, and it's fun just because, all right, like we're back. Football is back. And it's not even just for the players. It's like the entire atmosphere. It's football season. It's coming back around. You turn on NFL Network and they have like, you know, Good Morning Football, where they're traveling to all these different camps and all of that stuff. So the whole atmosphere is like, man, it's football season, and that's for everybody, you know. And if players will feel that the first 2 days, but then once you get into day three, four, five, the second week of camp, and you've been leaning on the same guys over and over and over, it's like, oh, all right, man. Like, you know, I'm ready to. That's why I think a lot of times coaches will bring in another team to play against or practice against. You know, if the Bills are playing the Vikings, they would practice against the Vikings for a week and then play them in the preseason game so that, you know, you can have that intensity stay up. You want that because I'm telling you, you go against the same guys. Like, I know how this guy likes to cover me. If I'm a DB, I know how this guy likes to run routes. You know, if Marcell, he knows how E. Wood is going to block him. you know? And so it's like, how much work can I get when I know how this dude is blocking me every single time?
Let us know what you think about the Bills offseason, what went right, what you didn't like, what you wish would have happened in the offseason, just your summary of the last 6 months. Brandon in Clarence is on the line with us. Hello, Brandon. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, how's it going, guys? I listen to you guys every day coming home from work. It's a long ride from Rochester.
Great. Thanks, Brandon.
Hey, thank you.
I got a question. You know, and I've been a devout Bills fan my whole life, and how many more years can we keep going through? Well, there's next year. There's always going to be next year. I mean, I know that, you know, we've gone through so many different management changes, coach changes. I mean, how much longer do you think this can go on before someone buys out and then moves the team? Do you think it'll ever happen? I mean, I know it's a little off topic of what you guys were talking about, but.
Before someone what? Buys out? What?
Buys them and then, you know, moves them out of Buffalo. Do you think that would ever happen? I mean.
No, not as long. No. Why would you say that, Brandon?
Well, I'm just thinking because, I mean, every year, I mean, you look at the last 10 years, I mean, winning seasons, how many have we had? You know, I mean, it's always been a 7-9 or 9-7. I mean, I don't want the Bills to go anywhere. I'm just asking your guys' opinion if it would ever happen if, you know, somebody new came in. Do you think that it ever would? I mean, I don't know.
No, don't.
That ended, Brandon.
Yeah, I think the Pegulas bought this team to keep the team here, and I don't – I would – 99.999% believe that they do not want to sell the team. You know, they want to bring a winning franchise back to Buffalo. And so, no, I don't think this team is going anywhere. I don't think anybody else is coming in to buy this team anytime soon.
No, not our lifetime, and I would guess not yours either, Brandon. And Pegulas are here to stay. They said it when they bought the team. They're not going anywhere.
All right. Well, I was just looking for another opinion, and I thank you for that. And,
sure.
Good night.
Thanks, Brandon. Thank you. Yeah, that kind of out of left field, that question. Threw me for a loop.
It threw me for a loop as well. That one, it definitely threw us for a loop.
Well,
real news, fake news. That was fake news.
That is fake news, Brandon. You got us right into fake news, real news. Brought to you by Yancey's Fancy, New York's Artisan Cheese. Fake or real? Brandon started it off. Yeah, that's fake. Playoff disappointment is real. The Bills will move because of it. Fake. How about this? Matt Miller on BleacherReport.com did a survey. He's, you know, gets in depth with some of his surveys. Matt Miller, BleacherReport.com, says the survey shows that Julio Jones of the Falcons is the NFL's best receiver. Matt Miller says he polled 30 NFL scouts, coaches, executives, and players. One simple question, who's the best receiver in the game? 98% said the same name, Julio Jones. Who might argue with that? That's real.
Right.
I think he is the best, right?
He is
there
the
anything
best.
He's missing he from his game?
I mean, Julio Jones has a combination of size, speed, route running ability, hands, everything. Like, he has everything that you can want in a receiver. And so I'm going to go real on this one. I think, you know, a lot of times you see bigger receivers, they're able to, you know, out jump guys. They might not be as fast. Julio Jones is a combination of everything. He is like Megatron was when Megatron was in the game.
He was the best when he played?
Right, exactly. You know, you have, like, he is the best receiver. It doesn't matter how big he is. That dude can do anything he wants to do on the football field if he wants to. So, yeah.
Who's number two? That's
the question.
A.J. Green would be near the top of my list. What do you think?
I would have to argue.
You're going
to
go Beckham, aren't you?
No, I would go Antonio Brown. You know, I like Antonio Brown.
He's just so physically unimposing that it's hard.
I know, but you know the crazy thing is,
he's very productive.
He is very productive, and he plays against double teams. He catches passes against double teams consistently. You know,
like special teams for him. You can't take that out of his game.
You can't take that away from him. So I think he would be number two. AJ Green would probably be number three for me.
Fake and real, part two. Jared Allen, longtime pass rush specialist, Minnesota Vikings. Is a Hall of Famer. Our friend Clark Judge from Talk of Fame Sports Network wrote that Jared Allen, because of his production as a pass rusher, should start thinking about Canton, Ohio. He points out that Jason Taylor, a first ballot choice, the only edge rusher among this year's 15 finalists. And the point that Clark Judge is making is that there's kind of a dearth of pass rush specialists who get consideration, and why not Jared Allen? Fake, real? Jared Allen is a Hall of Famer. I would say fake. I don't see that happening. Great player for a while, but no, I don't think he's a Hall of Famer. Donald, what do you think?
I think I'm going to go real on this one. I think at some point he will get into the Hall of Fame. I think 136 career sacks. You're talking about a guy who wasn't the most physically opposing guy. Like, this dude was – he just had a motor, you know, and he played at a high level every single game, and he got it done for a good period of time. I think he is loved amongst a lot of people in the NFL and around the NFL and in the media, and so I do think at some point he'll get in.
Fake or real? How about this one? The CBA should change and get more wiggle room for rookie deals. Ryan Shazier, the linebacker for the Pittsburgh Steelers, brought this up. Shazier says, you know, one of the problems he believes, like for Odell Beckham and some of the others missing time during OTAs and minicamp, is that, you know, there's no incentive. Players are playing on their rookie deals, and until they get to their second deal, they're really being underpaid. There are a couple of guys who aren't underpaid. It's a slotting system. First-round draft picks, you know, their salary is assigned to a slotting system. And Ryan Shazier says, you know, guys have to wait 5 years sometimes, sometimes four. We got to do a better job, he says, of structuring what we want to do. If you play at a high level, things should pan out for you. There should be changes for rookie deals in the NFL and the CBA. I say fake. No, don't do it. I think it has eliminated holdouts. I think it has, in some respects, redistributed money to veterans who have demonstrated that they should earn more money. And if you got to wait 4 years to demonstrate that you are a productive and effective NFL player, I'm okay with that. Fake. Don't change it. I love the 2011 changes that had the rookie wage scale. I think it's great.
You know, I think he has a point in, you know, he talks about guys like Derek Carr, second rounders, that are able to redo their deals. Like, they don't have a fifth-year option. You know, they can redo their deal in year two or year three if they want to. So, you know, in that aspect, he does have a point. It's like, man, I'd just rather go in the second round. Then if I ball out, I can redo my deal.
Derek Carr might not be the best example for this today because after, what, 3 years, Derek Carr got an amazing deal.
An amazing,
highest-paid player. So I guess the point is, if you outperform your contract, they will take care of you, especially if you're a quarterback. First round, second round, no matter what.
I've actually had people argue, too, you know, even if you outperform your contract, you're still under contract. You know, so you don't get paid until you're supposed to get paid. And so I can see both sides of it. I think, though, I would have to go fake. I think at the end of the day, they redid this so that the veterans, the guys that have played in this league who deserve to get paid, guys that have played through their first contract are the ones that get paid. You know, and if you redo it, now you're taking money away from those veterans that have proved that they can, you know, that they deserve that money. If you were to make changes, now you have guys who have a crazy rookie year, then second year he's like, I'm holding out. I need a new contract.
Right.
No, it doesn't work like that. You
Shouldn't
know, you need to
like
play.
That.
You play through your contract, and you get paid when you're supposed to get paid.
All right, fake news, real news, brought to you by Yancey's Fancy, New York's Artisan Cheese. Back in a moment with more of the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, live at One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
The John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And now, what have we learned from today's show?
What have we learned? Presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security, home theater, and the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. Had a lot of good discussion today about this Buffalo Bills offseason. And we talked with one of the standouts, Nathan Peterman, fifth-round draft pick, the quarterback from Pitt. He talked to us about his adjustment from playing in college to playing in the NFL.
You know, I think I definitely prepared well for this, but, you know, at the same time, there's only so much you can do. It's definitely a step up, and you can tell that with, you know, the way guys approach things. And then, you know, just the speed of the game and the talent that's on that field. So definitely just enjoyed learning from all the vets this past 6 weeks and, you know, all the things that we got off the field as well. But, you know, just learning on field, getting that kind of crash course into the playbook and, you know, into the speed of the game, the rhythm of, you know, the passing game for a quarterback as well. It's been good. So a lot of good things that I can take with me for this next month and go work on.
Nathan Peterman on his adjustment to the NFL, on his way for a little break before the rookies return. Today was the last day of their rookie development program. Just a little bit ago, we talked with Fred Jackson, 9-year veteran of the Bills and running back, 10 years in the league. He's going to play in the Spring League Showcase game coming up in a month, July 10th through the 15th. out in Napa, California. Fred Jackson, we asked him, why do you think he can still contribute to an NFL team at age 36 at running back?
It's one of those things, when you look at the touches that I have compared to, you know, Marshawn. Marshawn probably has, twice as many carries and, twice as much workload as I had my entire career. So there's still some tread on these tires, and if I didn't feel that was the case, I wouldn't be out here trying to do that. When I went to Seattle, I didn't get a lot of workload. They had a young back in Thomas Rawls that was, playing out of his mind. So I didn't get a heavy workload when I was there. I still feel like I can contribute to this game. And the best way for me to do that is, or the best way for me to show that is to get out here in this game and show so.
We wish him well, Fred Jackson, at that Spring League Showcase next month. All day long, Donald and I have been marking the end of the rookie development program as the end of the offseason. What was the most memorable story that a guest came up with here on the show over the last 6 months, Donald?
It wasn't just on the show. It went viral, went national. But I think it's Sharice Wright, and that's for everybody. Just how he went about ordering that Uber to get from Chicago to here. That is amazing. The fact that the driver did it is amazing. He slept in the car and all of that stuff and got here 2 minutes before meeting time. That is an amazing story.
You know what I liked? When Leonard Johnson was in with us, free agent defensive back, and he talked about how he wants to do a cooking show, how he cooks for his teammates, how he lives in a hotel but cooks for his teammates. I just found that fascinating.
I came to your house that week, and we talked about it. Like, hey, Murph,
we should do a cooking show. With Leonard,
yeah.
It was fun. And if you want more of this, it's up on our website, Top 10 Superlatives That Best Describe the Bills 2017 Offseason. Tomorrow we're going to talk a little bit about Bills of years gone by, the top 10 defensive performers in franchise history. Fred Smirlis joins us tomorrow. Thanks today to our presenting sponsor, Napa Auto Parts. Our intercom board op is Ryan Gates. Production assistants, J.J. Torito, George Blass, Jeff Koltnick, Thomas Hollander, Ryan Dukarm, and Jess Pappas. Our producer, Jay Harris. We'll see you tomorrow at noon with the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.